Yeah.
Good evening, everybody. It's the Tri-State Sports Guys coming to you live from beautiful downtown Norwalk, Connecticut. I'm Mike DePalma alongside my co-host, Danny Santarella, Tony D behind the glass. We got Neil Lynch calling in from the Hoboken studio. Neil, you with us, brother?
Yeah, we got audio only tonight. You can't see my pretty face, and that's a good thing.
You clean shaven now, dude? What kind of facial hair you got going on right now?
I got like a 5-day bender thing going on. It's not a good look.
It's called the Neil. I know that look, sure.
Yeah. The everyday look, yeah.
Yeah, it's called Neil on a Wednesday. I got it. I know what you're talking about. I don't know if I should start out like with anger. Can I tell you what, just off the top of my head, what I'm angry about?
Sure.
And it's not something, and I'm a big Christmas guy.
Yeah.
And I will tell you this, I was angry today until I read your, I didn't read your article fully till today, the one with your Christmas list.
Mm-hmm.
Till about 2 o'clock.
Yeah.
Made my day. Calm me right down. So I'm a Christmas spirit guy. I love Christmas. Christmas carols are out in my house all the time. But yesterday around Facebook, I'm sure you saw this video. And I got to ask Neil Lynch about this, his opinion on this, because this is your world here, Neil. And you know what I'm going to ask you about. It's the Christmas jammies little thing that's going on. Everybody's got 7 million hits on YouTube and probably as many on your Daily Motion. You know what I'm talking about, the Christmas jammies song?
I do, and I've personally boycotted it. Anyone who forwards me the link, I defriend them. I've refused to watch it because of the hype. I can't get behind something like that.
Well, here's the thing. So I see some people start sharing it. I don't know, yesterday, the day before. So I check it out, and it was posed as. Have you seen it, Dean?
I refuse to watch it, to be honest.
Good. Well,
let me
tell you why you shouldn't watch it. So it's posed to you as this family does a. This is their Christmas card. Their little e-card. You know, some people, they tell you the life story how their year went. So I'm like, all right, I'll click on this, and you watch it, and it's this video, and it's to the beat of Will Smith's Miami, and it's about their Christmas jammies, right? It's this guy and this girl, and you're like, it's just kind of cool, actually. Not that it's cool at all, but it's like kind of cute. Their little kids are in and everything. Then it comes out at the end. This guy talks about how he's quitting his job to start doing this for a living, and he plugs his website. So at no moment was this ever a real Christmas card.
To do what for a living? To make videos like this?
He wants to do viral videos. And he basically wants to do it for political campaigns is what his thing was. He was a news anchor.
Right.
He's leaving his job to do this for a living, to basically do political ads is what I'm gathering. And they started a company. And this was all this is a viral ad for his company. And they posted it as, and all these people are sharing it on Facebook as, it was just this simple family from North Carolina
yeah.
doing this goofy thing that went viral. And it was not. It was rolled out all professionally, and it made me so angry. The fact that I even liked it made me angry a
yeah.
little bit. But, I mean, Neil, did you know that whole thing, that that's what this all was about? This was a fully produced, rolled out thing that I'm sure used all his connections to get it rolled out, so ABC picked it up, NBC, all that. That doesn't make you angry a little bit, ruin Christmas a little bit for you?
A little bit. No, Christmas is canceled. It's ruined everything for me. I don't know what to believe anymore.
I don't know what from down, Santa Claus from whatever. I mean, it's horrible. And these people are still like, this is the coolest Christmas card ever. It's not a Christmas card. It's a commercial for 3.5 minutes with him and his wife, and the only reason you click on it is because the wife's pretty hot.
Yeah, I did notice that on just a still photo.
They do a little like side shot, so you
yeah.
see her little
yeah.
outline. You're like, wow, this girl's hot. You're gonna click on a girl. I mean, a girl that could pull off PJs.
Yeah.
Is a good looking girl.
Yeah, I mean, you
she's
know,
an actress. She's been in. She was on Homeland. She
yeah.
was in Iron Man.
That's great. I mean,
that's horrible.
Yeah, I don't like Christmas. I've never liked Christmas. And the interesting thing
you
about...
You wrote this gorgeous article today.
Yeah, no, but I mean, I'm
sweet
trying.
Conversation
I'm trying for my niece and my nephew.
This is just like the Grinch. Like, you were the Grinch and that little girl,
it.
Like...
But here's why I hate Christmas. And it has nothing to do with Jesus. It has nothing to do with the religion.
Thank
if
God,
you're into
we don't
that
need
stuff.
That. We don't need that backlash.
Yeah, but it has nothing... If you're into that and that's what you celebrate, then that's great. The commercialization of Christmas is what gets me. And now you just use the word. You just even said it in your little missive there. You go, you know, they're commercialized and this and that and whatever. And so the guy's trying to sell something, his business that he wants to run and get into. And that's just another reason to
just
hate.
Exploiting his little children.
Yeah, to hate the business side of Christmas, which unfortunately has become, what, 99% of Christmas?
Yeah.
How many people actually do goodwill? I don't, but I don't go
we
around.
We did a toy drive for the NYU Children's Hospital, my wife.
That's great. That's what it should be about.
Yeah, but
not about trying to start online viral businesses and being idiots.
I know.
You know?
It just made me angry. I don't know why I started the show with that. It just was on the fresh mind. But the reason I brought it up was because then I read your little article, and I got the sense you weren't a Christmas guy. I don't think
yeah.
you needed to say that out loud.
Nope.
I got the sense you weren't a huge Christmas guy. But you had the nice conversation with your niece, who's the same age as my daughter. It was an awesome article.
Yeah, I appreciate
it. It was good.
That.
If you figured out how to post it properly, we could advertise it and get some hits on it.
Yeah, I mean, if only we had a third leg of the show down in New Jersey. I mean, they could fill me in instead of sending me trombone wah-wah noises. Maybe I'd straighten everything out. But we don't have that kind of guy. We only have me, you, and Tony.
That's right. All right. Well, we do have as you saw on our Facebook page and on our website, we got a great guest calling at some point tonight. We're going to get in touch with Chris Herron. Everybody knows him from the documentary 30 for 30, Unguardable, and how he's turned his life around. He's got his foundation there, the Herron Project, and all the rest. So we're going to have him on a little bit. We got a lot to get to. I do want to get to Dave's, but I feel like maybe we should start, since we're like really got a lot of energy right now, I'm just debating whether to start off with the Knicks or baseball or possibly the Jets. But I want to start off with the Knicks. Okay?
Great.
I feel like... The Knicks season to me should be like a glorious moment for me, and I mentioned that on a show a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
The Knicks are my least favorite professional sports team by far. They're the Duke of like all the professional sports to me, so I just can't stand them. I haven't been able to stand them since I'm a little kid.
You're talking about even like the Braves and Phillies, the Knicks
for whatever
worse?
Reason.
Really?
I more than the Dolphins,
Patriots,
Dolphins, Pats. I didn't start hating the Pats until 10 years ago. I've hated the Dolphins, which is why that was a little bittersweet. But we'll get to that in a minute too. But, I mean, this Knicks season, you know, we broke the story, which turned out that our sources were not correct in the fact that Mike Woodson was going to be fired. But it's only a matter of time. He's going to get fired because they're not going to be able to hold up. I mean, I know you got Tyson Chandler back tonight playing Milwaukee, who's just in shambles. You got to assume they're going to win that game. If they don't win that game, then we should just not even retract anything we said because he will be fired tomorrow.
Yeah.
How many Knicks games do you, and you've seen the Nets start to turn things around, and I was actually, and it actually coincides, one side of it is that they have set some easy games, but they've won some decent games over this little stretch. When they demoted Lawrence Frank to being a film editor, whatever he's doing, and I thought it was an awful idea, and I couldn't stand Jason Kidd, and I was literally writing an article about why they should fire Jason Kidd already, and then things turn around. And maybe that's just what you need to have. You need to have one guy in control, and with Lawrence Frank hanging over him, Jason Kidd was not able to lead that team. And it kind of turned things around. So now the Nets are starting to win some games. They kind of are starting to, you know, they get Deron Williams back. Things are starting to shape up a little bit. And you get the Knicks. I mean, they're just a complete shambles. I don't care what anybody – I mean, Carmelo Anthony, for people to put him in the same conversation as the – all, you know, legitimate studs.
No,
in the
I never have done that.
You hate the word compiler, but this is the guy that compiles points. But I saw a stat in game-winning shots, in final shots of the game, he's like one for his last 18.
Yeah.
Something insane.
I've never once put him or listened to anyone that puts him. You're talking about like guys like LeBron and guys like Kobe. No. You were asking, I think, before how many Knicks games have I like looked at or whatever, and probably this year, probably about half a dozen.
Yeah.
Last year, I would honestly say I probably watched over 60.
Yeah.
Honestly. And to me, it's just because it's intriguing to me how bad it can get. Because even last year where they finished, second in the East, and they had that good record, they're unwatchable for me. And it's not that I just hate the NBA, because if I was living in San Antonio, I would probably watch 82 Spurs games. They're like the perfect team to watch. They share the ball, they play defense, they do all those things. The Knicks, I don't even know where you begin to turn it around. You have the nightmare with Stoudemire. You're paying him, $20 million a year?
Yeah.
He's got a bad back, and he can't
got
play.
And
Woodson have all this dissension
and
stuff.
He just had, because they were playing, you know, six games in 9 days, and they back-to-back.
Yeah, but we agreed, I think, 2 weeks ago. We were saying that if one of those teams can turn it around, it's got to be the Nets. The Knicks are just a broken franchise from the top down. I mean, that's a different conversation, but they have been for years.
Yeah.
So when they finish second in the East, I've been saying for a couple of years, what difference does it make? If Rose is healthy in Chicago, and then you have Miami, then what's the point of being the Knicks?
Yeah.
Where are you going?
And the Pacers.
Yeah, I mean, you're not
going
anywhere.
The Pacers are legit, and they're deep.
Yeah, but then you look at that and you go, I would love to see them beat Miami because I can't stand the Heat. But Are they going to? I mean, they look like they were last year.
I know.
And then they don't.
And then they don't. I know. Yeah. They are a year older. You know, they think they got to worry about, you know, how they fit Granger back into their scheme now when he finally does come back and play healthy.
Love
now,
that guy.
Yeah, I'm a big Danny Granger guy fan, too. Now, Neil, what are your thoughts? How many Knicks games are you watching? Is it just a broken mess? And even in the East, they're going to be, you know, a lottery pick?
It's kind of hard to understand how much leash that they're giving Woodson, considering, you know, just the overall lack of discipline, the overall lack of effort, concentration, energy, motivation. I mean, you name it, and he's failing in all categories as a head coach. And, you know, say what you will about what he brought to the team over D'Antoni, but, I mean, he's already lost control. And that, to me, that's one of the most important aspects of being a coach in the NBA, is to be able to look around your huddle and have the focus and the belief from all members in that huddle. If not, you know, maybe not so much from your bench players, but from your starting five or your starting six. And the fact that he has to address this issue every day after every game, and Carmelo's answering to it after every game, it takes its toll. You know, it wears you down. And, you know, it's tough. You hate to have such a short hook with people after, you know, not having too much of a sample size. But, I mean, he clearly, when you're making errors like he did this past week, where, you know, obviously should have called timeout and drew up a play, and instead he had Carmelo dribble around forever and then take the last shot. I mean, that to me was just one of many death knells for him. And, you know, I've never been, like, a huge Knicks fan, but, you know, I was saying this last week at the office holiday party. I was saying the Knicks have all these, like, personalities on the team that make you want to like them, because it's just they're like the anti-Spurs. And now you can extend that analogy to every facet of their game. Like, they are just really the anti-Spurs, the way that they play and the personalities that they have. And if they were winning, can you imagine the lore and the legend that they would be? But they're not. And you can see it's just not working.
Yeah, you know, Neil, I find the situation to be like this. I mean, you look at the amount of rope he gave Isaiah Thomas. Isaiah Thomas might be the worst coach / executive in the history of the game of basketball. And Jim Dolan gave him that much rope. I mean, so I agree with everything you said. They look like just a dysfunctional group of guys, and I don't want to put it all on Carmelo's head, but everything runs through him. I mean, you know, I look at everything the other night, and I said, you know, Woodson should have called a timeout. He had, what, 3 timeouts? He should have called. I used to coach 10-year-olds, and I would make sure I had a timeout in my pocket and a dry erase board, you know, handy. I swear to you, dude, because, you know, you look at it and you go, in case I need to do something, draw up a little Princeton back cut or something. But I watched Carmelo cross half court, and it looked as though he thought to himself, I should call timeout. That's what it looked like to me. I can never prove it. But, like, he could have stopped there. He looked like he wanted to. He's a good enough player, a world-class type player, where he should go, you know what, we do have 3 timeouts. I mean, I'm hard-pressed to believe that Larry Bird or Magic Johnson wouldn't call timeout right there. So, I mean, he could have saved the coach, but the fact of the matter is he's so selfish and so self-involved, he just does whatever he wants. And he just, okay, I'll just shoot a Pete Maravich floater from 30 feet away rather than saving my coach's tail and calling this timeout. So, I mean, to your point, you're talking about how screwed up they look. I mean, right there, I mean, a world-class type basketball player should know, I could call timeout here, but it's from the top down, from Dolan for years now to the coaches. I mean, D'Antoni, I never thought he was a good coach. I mean, you look at his system in Phoenix, it's garbage. They score a million points. They can't beat anybody when it matters. And then he brings in Woodson. As a defensive guru, I haven't seen him play a lick of defense. So, I mean, where do you go from here, Neil? I mean, I hate to put you on the spot, but who's a coach that could come in other than Red Auerbach or John Wooden and, like, fix this thing? Is there anybody out there that you think could, you know what, or are there roster moves they just have to make, like try to get rid of some of this dead salary, or what is it that they have to do? Because I'm not a big Knicks fan either, but I'm curious. Is there something they can do that you see?
I mean, you gotta bring in someone that has the respect of the league at this point, and that, like, a Phil Jackson type, and there's only a handful of those that exist on planet Earth, you know, and the fact that you probably don't have the kind of money to hire someone like that. And so in my mind, it's like you're not going to – it's not as simple as just hiring a new coach to get them to play. It's a personnel situation where, you know, it's just whatever they thought coming into the season, it's not clicking. And to be honest, it's like you got to start thinking about trades. You got to start thinking about getting some draft picks. You know, I've always been kind of a supporter of that movement where, you know, if it's not working with your current personnel, and especially an aging personnel, because that's an old team you have on there. I mean, they have some young guns in Hardaway and whatnot, but, you know, I'd like to see them try and get a little bit younger and follow in the footsteps of, like, the Denver Nuggets or someone like that, or the Warriors, you know, or even Portland. You know, I'm a big fan of that. What's going on in the West. The Eastern Conference basketball has kind of sucked. I mean, you look at the Atlantic Division, they're horrible. And, you know, you look out west, and it seems like it's just more exciting basketball being played.
I agree 100% with you there. You know, Mike, we were just Mike stepped away for a sec. We were covering the New York Knickerbockers, and we got into a little bit of the Nets. Now, Neil, I know you're a Jersey guy, and they're not in Jersey anymore, but I'm curious to get the opinions of you two gentlemen.
Yeah.
We'll start with Neil on the Nets. I mean, why? Because he's better looking than
okay.
you. So we'll go with Neil. We'll figure out what Neil thinks about the Nets, other than the fact that Paul Pierce is the greatest player in the NBA. Go ahead.
Well, and you know, this is the peak, right? This is the high that we see, the big plus that we saw when they brought in the likes of Pierce and Garnett. It's the fact that they have this ability to rise up and play good basketball. And, you know, Deron Williams is, you know, I know Mike's not a big fan. I'm not so much a fan of his either because I feel like he kind of picks his spots. He decides when he's going to play good basketball or not. I don't think you get that same mentality from the guys like Garnett or Pierce. They're kind of giving it their all at all times. So your hope that will become infectious with D. Will. You know, and to be honest, maybe it was Lawrence Frank stepping aside and letting Jason Kidd have full reign. You know, and I think that, you know, and as a team, as a player, when you see two coaches butting heads, it's kind of like you're watching your parents getting divorced. You know, that's never a good situation. You're not in a good mindset. And when you have, you know, a clear-cut leader in that huddle and everyone's behind him, you're going to get more cohesive basketball. So, I mean, I like what they're doing. Now they just need to stay healthy. I mean, that's the big thing. I know you know, I say it, no says it all the time, but, I mean, health is going to be crucial down the stretch. If Pierce can continue this level of play and then, you know, Garnett and Lopez can play off each other, they have a good shot of taking the Atlantic Division.
Yeah, you know, what frustrated me most about this bad start that they got off to was that all the people that hated the trade pointed to the trade as to why they're doing poorly, which was just dumb. It didn't make it meant you were not watching the games. Now, granted, Garnett has been awful this year, but the guys they traded away, I mean, who, if they had over those two guys, was going to help them? Marshawn Brooks doesn't even get in the rotation a lot of days, nights up in Boston. You know, Gerald Wallace is averaging like 3 points a game. The hump? Are we missing the hump that much? I mean, what guy did we trade away that was going to help us this much? So, and you know, Pierce gave you what we thought they were going to give you. The thing was, you lost your starting center, who was probably the best offensive center in the league, when you talk about just pure scorer, and you lost your point guard for an extended period of time. So it wasn't even the injury to Paul Pierce that he wound up getting wasn't an age issue. I mean, he broke a bone. And so, you know, I just think it kind of spiraled. I thought Jason Kidd just looked just overmatched as a head coach a lot of times. I think it took him a little while to get his feet wet. And I actually heard Stan Van Gundy on, he was on ESPN Radio, and he was talking. He said, I can never imagine just being thrust into an NBA coaching job as your first ever head coaching job at any level. I mean, just to get the kinks out of just doing it. Everybody thinks they could do it. Just like we thought we could, oh, I know how to announce a football game. How many million times have you watched a game? You could do it. Until you're actually doing it and things are moving so fast, you know, you can't ever replicate that. Even if you're a high school coach, at least just getting your feet wet of to what's going on. And I think it did take them a little while to get that. But I think that clearly in their conference, I mean, in their division, they're the best team. I mean, who is that? You're going to say Toronto? You're going to say Boston? Clearly not the Knicks. I mean, they are the team in that division to win. And I think that, you know, it didn't start out the way they thought it was going to, and there's going to be another rough patch at some point. But I think you keep Garnett healthy. I think, like what Neil said, having just his presence there, because the bugaboo for the Knicks, for the Nets the last couple of years is having three good quarters sandwiched around an awful third quarter, or an awful second quarter, an awful fourth quarter, where, you know, they put up 8 points, and it just, you can't come back from it, and they look like they all just disappear. I think that you needed somebody to stabilize that locker room, and I think he will eventually be that guy. So they're moving in the right direction. They're going to, you know, for as poorly as they started, I feel very confident they're going to win some. I thought they were going to be a mid-50s win team. I think now they're probably looking at a mid-40s win team.
That probably wins that division.
I think that wins that division running away. I think they can rest people.
The thing I had a problem with was when Jason Kidd did the, you know, Sodagate.
Yeah, you didn't like that?
Who'd they blame it on?
Who did they blame it on?
Tyshawn Taylor.
Yeah, poor kid.
Where'd Tyshawn Taylor go to school?
Your boy.
University of Kansas. I mean, that's the first thing that soured me on the Nets this year. But I really don't have a rooting interest. I've said that on the show before. I'll watch either one of them.
How could you not at this point? Like you just said, Tyshawn Taylor and...
Well, I watch more of the Nets now.
So you have to be a Nets fan at this point.
Pearson Taylor, no.
Is any professional team more represented? Or is Kansas basketball represented by... Is there any team that's got three KU guys? Maybe.
You got... The Knicks have Cole Aldrich. Chicago's got Heinrich.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're scattered around. Yeah, there's clearly a million guys. But to have two on the same team, both in the rotation. Tyshawn Taylor shows glimpses of being like a real guard in this league.
Problem.
Yeah.
But anyway, I mean.
I'm a Mirza Teletovic guy. I think Mirza could be a player.
I didn't even know who he was until I watched that Knicks-Nets game the other night.
You know,
I've never
turned me on to him last year. We have a fan who's been like a TSG super fan. Tony knows him. This guy Luke from Australia. And he's, like, always writing. He's a big Nets fan from Australia.
Yeah.
Big basketball player over there. Loves it. And he was always he would always ask questions on our message board. Well, how come Mirza's not getting more time? How come Teletovic isn't getting more time? And he was, an outstanding European player.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know. Guys could play. And I like the fact that Paul Pierce coming off the bench. We mentioned it last week.
Yeah. The fear that I have is, let's say the Nets win 40-some-odd games. They win the division. What makes the trade worth it because of what they... how they mortgage their future, giving it to Boston, essentially. Let's say they turn it around a little bit, win 43 games, go 500, whatever they do. They win. That probably wins the division over Boston or whoever else. What do they have to do to make that trade worth what they gave up?
Yeah.
I mean, you know what I mean? Because now you're looking at a team that is fractured. They're fixing it slowly.
Right.
They have a coach with no experience, Hall of Fame player, but he's got no experience as a coach. So what do they have to do to make everything worth it? And I don't know that they're ever going to be able to recoup what they gave up in this trade. I agree with you. I liked the trade at the time.
Well, you mean just the picks?
Well, I mean just everything, because you look at the age of some of these guys.
Yeah.
I mean, Garnett and Pierce are going to be done in what?
2 years.
2 years?
Yeah.
Okay. You and I both agree we're not huge fans of Deron Williams. Right?
Yeah. No, yeah, I'm not a fan of him.
You know what I mean? You look at all those things that are going on there. So these guys all retire. Jason Terry, they're all gone, whatever. You're back where you were, but it's going to be an older Williams, an older Joe Johnson, an older Brook Lopez. And you're not going to have any real draft picks.
But you were,
the
thought process was with what their trade was going to be, they were going to be a perennial playoff team.
Yeah, but they're not now.
Well, they're not going to win right now this year, right? Well, they're not going to win, but they're going. The only thing I'm saying, I think they're going to make the playoffs. Can you agree with that?
I would agree with that.
So they're going to get a pick what in the 20s, high teens.
I don't even know. Do they have one definitely?
No, they don't. I'm saying they would have had.
Okay.
So it's like, who are they going to get there? I mean, granted, you look at guys like, you know, Paul
maybe
George.
Andrew Wiggins if they're drafting 20th.
Yeah, thanks. All right, speaking of Andrew Wiggins, we're going to take a quick commercial break.
Yeah.
When we come back, I'm going to just step away from the mic. Neil, you can go pour yourself a cocktail or whatever you're having, because we are going to be joined in the Tucci Lumber Hotline by the one and only Bob Davis, Kansas basketball announcer. You're going to just love to rap with him for a little while, right?
I got a few questions.
You got a couple questions.
I got a few questions.
Okay, all right, so we're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back with the Tri-State Sports Guys.
Surrounded by the dead. They weren't rioters, from what we were told. We have survivors here. Civilians, women, children. They went out there.
Follow the story in the Ragnarok Rising Saga by D.A. Roberts. Available on Amazon, Smashwords, Barnes & Noble, and BooksAMillion.com. Visit RagnarokRising.weebly.com.
Hey, we're back with Tri-State Sports Guy.
Hey.
It's Mike, Dan, and Neil here, Tony D behind the glass. I think I'm very excited to hear you talk Kansas basketball because it's been which is rare for you and what I know of you. Very optimistic. You were very excited. You were very positive going into this season.
Yeah.
And I sense that is kind of draining away from you. It's not like they're awful.
No, I haven't lost hope. I am.
Is that a national championship contender, though?
I think they can be.
You think they can be?
Yeah, come March, I think they can
be. I mean, right now, from what you've seen, I mean, granted, you know, you get some guys that need to gel a little bit, but, I mean, what would be a disappointing season? Not getting to the Elite Eight, not getting to the Final Four, in your mind? I mean, is it Final Four or bust?
Yeah.
You really think so?
Yeah.
Still, just by what you've seen.
Well, I think what you see right now is arguably the most talented team in the country. And
yeah.
Talent is like anything else. I mean, you know, you have to put it into motion. But I've seen Arizona play a bunch. To me, they are right now hands down the best team in the country. So I think when you look at the parts Kansas has, playing 9-10 guys, all of whom are Kansas-type players, good, solid Division I players, I don't think there's any question that they can get all the way to the Final Four, if not win the whole thing. But they have a lot of problems that they have to fix that I'll be interested to ask Mr. Davis about.
Well, I think he's joining us. You want to bring him on the air?
Yeah,
we got Mr. Davis. All right.
We're going to head out to the Tucci Lumber Hotline right now to talk to Kansas basketball announcer, Mr. Bob Davis. Bob, are you with us, sir?
I am. I'm all the way from Kansas talking to you. Is that beautiful or what?
That's one of the coolest things I've heard in a long time, Bob. The first question I want to start with is, can we just talk a little bit about these last few games here? I mean, they looked good on Saturday against New Mexico. They got some things going. We know about the struggles they have with Villanova and Florida and a host of other games where they've looked a little inconsistent. Could you just talk a little bit about what you've seen in these past three, four games?
Well, I've seen a lot of youth. I think that's certainly part of it. It's a talented group, but they're kind of finding their way. And the point guard had a good ball game, Nadir Tharp against New Mexico, and he's really a key to tying the whole thing together. They've had as many as four freshmen, even briefly five freshmen, on the floor at one time. So these guys, while they are talented, they are learning about Division I basketball. Whoever you are coming out of the high school ranks, this is still a pretty good step. And they have played a tough schedule, but hopefully in the long run, the schedule will help them.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I mentioned before the season started, Bob, that to me it was more Perry Ellis and Nadir Tharp were the guys I was focusing on coming into the year. And then I saw, you know, Tharp starting some games, and they started Mason for a little bit there for two or three games. When you see the kind of decision-making Tharp made on Saturday, which was outstanding, he played great against New Mexico, does he look to you, obviously I haven't seen him in person, does he look like he's better than Mason, or is it something that you think it's just a two-headed monster or one of those guys head and shoulders above the other?
Well, they're both talented kids, and I think they'll be on the floor at the same time on occasions. They have a little bit in the early going, but Nadir's the one that's the true point guard. Mason had not played point. He'd been a scoring guard in high school, even though he's built like a point guard. But Nadir's got to be the guy because of his experience, and he is one of the few really vocal guys on the team. Perry Ellis and Wiggins and some of the other young guys are kind of quiet guys. They're not vocal or natural leaders in that regard. So that's why Nadir's so important. And he played 37 minutes against New Mexico, and when he's playing well, he'll probably play a lot of minutes.
Yeah, and I think he should. We spoke to Greg Gurley, Kansas color analyst, a few weeks ago, and I had mentioned Perry Ellis to him, and he told me what a quiet kid he is, what quietly spoken young man he is. But to me, he's one of the more underrated players I see, and I'm a little bit biased in that. But is it something you see with him where maybe he just doesn't assert himself, or is it that the guards are having trouble getting the ball inside to him?
Yeah, they got to get it to him. He can take it to the basket very, very well. He's a good shooter. And, they've played a lot of zones, and maybe the zone has made it a little hard to do that. But coming into the season, I think Bill Self told you Perry might be the team's leading scorer, or he might be the number four scorer, just depending on how it shakes out. But he's got a knack for getting the ball in the basket, and you know, there's something to be said for that in this game, and he can do that. He was a four-time Kansas High School Player of the Year and led his team four state titles, and you know, had an illustrious high school career, was a McDonald's All-American. So certainly he's got the ability, but he's not going to be very vocal about it, and he could probably spend a day with it, and he wouldn't say much. But he's a really good kid, a good student, and I think he's going to have a great career.
Bob, can we talk about that zone for a sec? Because I've seen it like four or five games in a row now. Is it as simple as putting Joel Embiid on the free throw line there, dumping the ball in him in the middle of that 2-3? I know Villanova ran a 1-3-1 for a while. Is it just that they're not exploiting the middle of the court in terms of getting it into his hands to look down low for Ellis?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. They need to get it to the big guys against the zone. But the other aspect against the zone would be to hit some three-point shots. And the guys that have been their best shooters, and I think they're all young guys, Andrew White and Brandon Green and Connor Frankamp. The coach is hoping one of those guys will step forward and be a real threat. And Green showed some signs of that in the New Mexico game. So it'd be good to have the inside threat, but you've got a guy who can pop in from three-point range against the zone. That helps a lot, too.
Yeah, we're here with Bob Davis, Kansas basketball announcer. And, Bob, why doesn't Andrew White play? Why? What is the deal with that? I've had friends of mine that are Kansas fans. I've talked to them about that. Why doesn't Andrew White play? Is it a defensive thing? Is it something he doesn't practice? Because, I mean, he can shoot the lights out, but he doesn't get any minutes.
He's played some in the early going. He did not play the other night against New Mexico. He's got a hip pointer right now. I don't know if he'll be able to play Saturday or not. I would think he'd have a chance, but he's been a little nicked up. That's the reason. And he and Green and Frankamp are all kind of battling for that same spot, and it's pretty competitive. But Andrew will be back in the mix. He's come a long way. This is his second year, so he's a little farther down the road understanding the system and so on. So I think you can look to see more of him playing as soon as he's healthy.
I certainly hope so, because every time I see him in the game, he looks like the only kid that can make any baskets. But, Bob, what do you think about Wiggins? Yeah, he absolutely can. What are your thoughts on Wiggins from what you've seen so far in the early going here? Has he impressed you to the degree that you thought he might, or is he just having some of those freshman little baby steps that he's had to take?
Well, probably yes to all of those. You know, he's had his moments where he's looked like a freshman, but obviously he's extremely talented. And, you know, he's not the greatest outside shooter in the world, but he got hot against Florida. His real strength is taking it to the goal and you know, just using his athletic ability to do things. He's very, very active. He doesn't say much. He's like some of these other kids. Now, you know, he's had all this hype, which is probably, for the most part, very unfair. You know, they call him the best high school player since LeBron and things like that. And then, you know, Bill Self said he's not going to live up to those things, but by the same token, he can't run from it. He needs to embrace it. And he's had moments where he was just spectacular. And I think he'll see more consistency as we go along, as he feels his way in the college game. Defenses obviously are coming after him, but his natural ability is going to kick in. And with the Joel Embiid having the big guy inside, that's going to help Wiggins on the wing.
You know, I noticed in the Florida game where Scottie Wolbekin played so well for them, he took over the game. You know, he just got the basketball on the wing. He dribble penetrated. He was making plays for his teammates. And when I see Andrew Wiggins assert himself like that, he pretty much goes by everybody like he's in a sports car.
Yeah.
So is it just because he's a good kid? That's all you hear about him. He's a good kid. Coach Self says it all the time. He doesn't want to be selfish or anything like that. But isn't there just a time where he should just take the ball, Bob, and just kind of take over the game a little bit, being that he is their one real slashing threat, maybe along with Seldon?
Yeah, I think he'll have some games down the road where he does kind of take over. And we saw a little bit of that in the Florida game. You mentioned playing against Wilbekin and that Florida team. KU started four freshmen. Florida started four seniors. And right there, you know, that tells the story. They got off to a great start in the first half and then had to hang on and win the game. But a good veteran team against a potentially good young team was that matchup, plus a you know, an unbelievable environment there in Gainesville. Our students were there early, and they were really into the ball game. So just keep your eye on Andrew Wiggins. I think he'll be fine. He'll be, if not the leading scorer, right near the top for Kansas, but he's certainly a focal point for the other defenses.
I certainly hope so, Bob. Just one last question before I hand it over to my co-host here. Okay. What are your thoughts on these next a couple games here? Georgetown, San Diego State, these are a couple good teams. Georgetown's had some struggles, but do you have any inside information on what we can expect as Jayhawks fans?
Well, I think everybody will be delighted to see Allen Fieldhouse. It'll be a day short of a month since Kansas has played a game in the Fieldhouse, so it'll be good to be back in there on Saturday morning. Georgetown will be a good team. I remember Joshua Smith, when he was at UCLA, he gave the Jayhawks the Dickens. And you got to figure out him, plus they've got other good, strong players on the perimeters. And it'll be a great ball game. They played a couple of years ago in Maui, and Kansas won a close game. Otto Porter, obviously, has been a great player for them the last couple of years, and he's moved on. But this is going to be an interesting series. It's game one of a four-game series, and so they're going to get well acquainted over the next few seasons. So we're looking forward to that, and also San Diego State, having played New Mexico. San Diego State and the Lobos are probably the two best teams in the Mountain West. So one of those teams is very likely to win that league championship. So that'll be a test. And right in the middle, Toledo, one of the good teams from the MAC, they're off to a great start. So that'll be a good game as well.
Bob, it's Mike DePalma here. Now, my first question, my most important question, did you even know that there were Kansas Jayhawk fans in Connecticut as diehard as my co-host, Dan Santarella? I got to hear, if it was up to him, we'd talk 2 hours every night about Kansas Jayhawk basketball. Did you even know that the fan base extended out to Connecticut?
You know, we run into Jayhawks all over the country, wherever we travel. I have not been, I've been to New York a couple of years ago, I guess, but I always see people there that have KU roots. Chicago's a great KU town, so is Dallas. So is Denver, but it's great to have some people in the East. I've got a lot of friends in New York, having been on the baseball beat. Love to go to New York and run into people with Kansas ties, and just tell them to hang in there and enjoy it. The games maybe start a little later, but that'll be okay. They can hang in there and be with us all season long, and I'm glad to hear that the guys are making themselves known, and even though it's a big city, you can still wave weed back there.
Oh, yeah. But look, we found out we were going to have you on today, and Dan just did that whole interview, no notes or anything. I mean, he could talk to you all night long. I mean, but when I mentioned to him earlier in the show, you know, it's UConn country here, so I'm a UConn fan and happy to see Kevin Ollie coaching up there. But I asked him what would be the line in the sand to make whether this season is successful for Kansas or whether it's a disappointment. And he said Final Four or bust. And anything less than a Final Four appearance, to his mind, with the talent that they have, would be a disappointment. You kind of agree with that, having seen them to the extent you have?
I think you go into every season hoping for that kind of an ending to get to the Final Four. Everybody would take that, but there are going to be a lot of really good teams that don't get to the Final Four, obviously. I think you'd ask Bill Self that question. His criteria would be to win your league championship. If you can do that, that sets up a lot of other things. If they've won or shared 9 league titles in a row. So that's probably the goal at this point. But then obviously what everybody remembers is what happens in March. And if you can get on a run, you know, Bill's been to a couple of Final Fours, including winning a title. This will be one of the teams, and there's probably, I don't know, 12 or 15 when we get down to that point that would be good enough to do it. Here we are in Kansas, and I don't think any of us expected to see Wichita State in the Final Four last year. And they earned it, and now they're back this year at good or better than they were last year. So certainly they're a team with a shot at them. There are a number of teams that can do it, but you got to be both good and lucky at the right time.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of the things that makes, you know, college basketball such a beautiful game and makes it so exciting. And even as a casual fan, you get into the whole March Madness thing because you never know what the team's going to, you know, everybody fills out their brackets and you never know. Now, you mentioned earlier, my last question, you mentioned earlier about your, you know, your ties to baseball. You were Kansas City Royals announcer for quite some time. I know, you know, you just announced for them last year, but you still, I'm sure, follow the team. And this is a team, we're big baseball up here. You know, I'm a big Mets fan. We've been hearing about the Royals organization and their youth and Hosmer and Moustakas and all these guys, and finally they're up. And I mean, is the sense in Kansas City that this is the time is now, and finally we've got the pieces with James Shields and the rest, that we're going to make this next step and become a real contender year in and year out? Or are people starting to see some of the flaws in Moustakas and Hosmer? What's the sense in Kansas City?
Well, I think they feel like this is the year they've been pointing for, 2014. They got 10 over 500 last year. It was one of the second time they'd finished over 500 in a long, long time. And pitching's the key, and James Shields gave them the leadership in that, in the number one spot, and some other guys came through. The bullpen was nothing short of sensational, but I think Hosmer is going to be a star for the next several years. He hit over 300. He's got power. He's a gold glover at first. He's certainly one of the pieces, but they've got a little blend of veterans, the new guy, the new young guys like that. And I think the signing this week of Omar Infante is going to have some real impact, because he's a veteran middle infielder who is a good defender, a good situational hitter, and I think he'd be a great leader, particularly for the Latin guys on the team. So, you know, the Central Division, Detroit had that great pitching staff last year. They're going to be good again, but they don't have Fielder after that trade, so they'll have a little different look. But anybody that's got Miguel Cabrera is going to be tough to contend with. But I think the AL Central's fairly wide open at this point.
And it's really developed into one of the better divisions in baseball, and it's exciting. You talk about their bullpen. I think Greg Holland is a guy that a lot of people around the country don't realize what a dominant closer he is. They got some power arms there. They could shorten the game a little bit. You know, I know they are going to be kind of the sexy pick as they're going to make the next step, and I'm sure we'll be on that bandwagon as well. So we'll be following. It's got to be exciting to be in Kansas City right now. We got the Chiefs. You got the Royals on the coming up. You got you know, your KU there. You got a lot of things going on in Kansas City, so you got to be. It's got to be a good time to be a sports fan.
Yeah, even the soccer team's done well, Sporting Kansas City. So everybody's excited. We'll see how the Chiefs finish. They're obviously going to be in the playoffs, but what spot yet we don't know for sure. But they've had quite a turnaround after winning just two games last year.
Yeah, well, I know, and we had predicted that on the show with Andy Reid and Alex Smith. They made some good moves. They got a lot of talent on that defense. It'll be exciting. Well, Bob, I really appreciate your time calling in on a Wednesday night. I am sure my co-host will be just following your every word for the rest of the season, because he doesn't miss a game. But we really appreciate your time, and good luck with Kansas basketball.
All right, we'll connect up again. Good to talk to you guys.
All right, thank you very much. That's Bob Davis, announcer for the Kansas Jayhawks. You just rap with somebody associated with the Kansas Jayhawks like every week.
Yeah.
That's just like in your phone. It should be that way.
Yeah.
We'll just, I'll go and, my father just brought down some homemade sausage for us.
Yep.
So we're going to take a break in a minute. We're going to have a little sausage like gentlemen.
Right.
Too bad Neil doesn't have some in the Hoboken studio. My apologies go out to Neil, but we're going to have some homemade sausage. I spent about 11 hours on Saturday. This is no lie. We had 480 pounds of pork.
Yeah.
This is not a lie. There's 12 guys down in a basement.
And you're on Facebook telling people I'm single. He's making sausage 12 hours a day.
We got a lot going on.
Yeah.
So we're gonna have a little bite. Get some energy.
Right.
We got Chris Herron calling in. We got Due to You Series. I think we go right to Due to You Series. We come back from the break.
It's my favorite.
Just to loosen the. I mean, I'm angry. You're talking about Kansas.
I'm thrilled right now.
I mean, mod on. All right, we'll be right back. It's Mike Dan and Neil with Tri-State Sports Guys.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Really, Really, Really Bad Dancer.
Mr. Really, Really, Really Bad Dancer.
Arms swinging, knees bending, head bobbing to no particular rhythm. You're either dancing or you have fleas.
Call me a doctor.
As soon as you hit the dance floor, the taunts begin. Is that all you got, playa? Unfortunately, yes, that's all you got.
Pour it on now.
Who's in the house? Some guy who can't dance. That's who's in the house.
You're done.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, Mr. Happy Feet, because you really put the oogie in boogie.
Mr. Really, Really Bad Dancer.
Neil, you are missing out on this homemade sausage. I mean, can you hear us eating? I mean, I don't even have to ask you how much you like sausage. Neil, you must love it.
I'm Captain Sausage. I'm Sergeant Sausage. I put it on everything.
Oh, I put it on everything. All right, well, we get into everybody's favorite topic right now. We're going to get into Due to You Serious. We got Chris Herron joining us at 9, Neil, so you got about 15 minutes to get everything you got to get out. All right, buddy? I'm going to let you run the show. I'm not going to talk over you.
All right, well, I'll start with this. I'm in five fantasy football leagues, and that's not counting a college football pick'em. I have a slight obsession of a slight addiction. I need to look into it. But one of the so I'm pretty much eliminated in all my leagues, and I shouldn't be eliminated in one of the leagues. In that one league, I was up 130 to 120 something, and all my players are done. The other my opponent had one player. That player, Antonio Brown, wide receiver, kick returner, punt returner, Pittsburgh Steelers. So he goes and he grabs a touchdown right off the bat, and I'm thinking, all right, I'm starting to get a little worried. I'm getting a little nervous. I'm shaking in my boots. And then there's a punt, but it's in the second quarter. He takes the punt to the house. Well, I'm screwed. I'm now going to lose. I then watch the replay, and as I watch the replay, they cut to the Cincinnati Bengals punter who's lying lifeless, motionless on the field like he's been shot. They show the replay, and it turns out as he's going to make the tackle on Antonio Brown, this linebacker from the Steelers just launches his face and his helmet and spears the Bengals punter directly in the jaw. I mean, like, helmet on skin. There was nothing protecting this Bengals punter. The punter gets up. He has blood all over his face. You find out later he's got a fractured jaw, cracked vertebra, a concussion. I mean, the dude basically got hit with a sledgehammer to the face, which, you know, can be a little painful. I lost that game, that fantasy football game, because no one threw the flag. Not one zebra picked the yellow hanky out of his sock and threw it.
Well, here's the thing, Neil.
It's a six-point swing.
There's no – look, helmet to helmet's a penalty. Helmet to bare skin jaw is not a penalty, dude. You got to know your rule book. Show me the rule where it says you can't have your helmet just hit square into somebody's jaw. I mean, just imagine the pain of that moment where this guy's 260 plus, full speed, somebody's crown of his helmet into your jaw, dude.
Yeah. That's why I stopped playing football.
The fear of
I wasn't taking that beating.
Ah, Neil, that's a painful fantasy loss, dude. But you got a weird league. I mean, how is that not the defense special teams getting points? What kind of league where the player gets that? That's a bold
You know, and I'm in another league where the defense special teams would have got those points. So there's a lot at play and at stake in this game. And, I mean, to be honest, I was almost not going to win the game anyway because I thought Toby Gerhart and Cecil Shorts III were starting. So I'm not qualified to go to the championship after all. But here's the point of the story.
What's the point?
There's Kevin Huber, the punter for the Bengals. He actually received a nice little note, a letter from a 7-year-old. And it reads, "Dear Kevin, I hope you feel better soon. I'm mad at the Steelers because you are my number one player. I am 7 years old and love the Bengals and Bearcats. I know you played for the Bearcats and Bengals, and I love the teams. I hope that Steeler player loses his house and has to live in his car. Get well soon, 7-year-old.
Neil, did you ever stop and think that maybe this fantasy fallout was your punishment for sending me trombone noises because I don't know how to adequately operate WordPress?
I tell you what, I've done a lot of bad things in my life, so there's probably a lot of negative karma points coming my way, but you can't rob me on that. I mean, what did Huber do to deserve that grill piece?
That blood's on your hands, my man. That bad karma siphoned through your Yahoo Fantasy Sports League right into that guy's jaw. So that blood's on your hands, and you ruined the Christmas this year. Maybe you should think about being nicer to other people.
Especially me.
Especially to Dan over here. He's a salt of an earth guy. He's writing, you know, great articles about his nieces and nephews. And you're over here making fun of the poor guy. You know, he's trying to make the world a better place.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm doing.
Everyone needs to go to sadtrombone.com and bookmark it. Because you will be using that for the rest of your life. Every time someone talks to you. Because that's what's going on in my office. Everyone's playing it. Every time I talk, it's hilarious.
All right, what else you got, Neil?
Well, you want to talk about karma. How about the current long snapper for the Philadelphia Eagles, John Darambos? I don't know how to pronounce that. He got his football scholarship at UTEP, that's the University of Texas, El Paso, by lying and using tape of another player. I mean, I'm starting to think this whole honesty thing is not the good way to go through life.
That guy is gonna—he's gonna cost them a big-time game with a bad snap. That can't be true. You get a scholarship? I get like maybe you walk on to a team. You're going to give somebody a scholarship? Like, we were good athletes.
Notre Dame.
You know how hard it was to try to get money? Like, you know, like, remember, like, if it was just me sending clips out of, you know, Bryce Harper and being like, look, this is me.
Remember when Notre Dame hired George O'Leary and he lied on his resume that he played football at the university? I believe it was New Hampshire, he said. So, I mean, he's applying for the Notre Dame job.
But he had other things. Other things on his resume, though. You know what I mean? Like, he's got other got coaching things. This guy's only way he's going to get a scholarship is to say he's a good football player.
Let's try this.
Let's try this.
That'd be great. Let's just write to, like, you know, Kansas football. Come on, Bob Davis. I'm friends with the guy.
That's it.
Him and Greg Gurley.
You put me in a pair of shorts and nobody running at me,
I'll
make it rain out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
I just, in pads, I'm awful.
Right.
But, I mean, if you get me in just throwing, like, you know, a passing tree in shorts, and we maybe, like, shorten it, so instead of, like, 10 yards, there were 8 yards, and like, this guy's firing a ball 65 yards on the field. We can make this happen.
I don't think there's any question that you could do it. I don't think so. I don't think there's any question. I think Neil could.
Neil, do you regret that you didn't do something like this?
Yeah.
When you were out there showing off, showcasing your quarterback talents, I had no aspirations to ever play in college, so I never even tried to do anything. But you were, you know, showcasing your talents. You regret a little bit that you didn't use your skills behind a camera and saying, like, look, this is what I got here. A Photoshop?
Yeah, I'm thinking we kind of overpaid for the video editor that we commissioned to put together my highlight reel to send to colleges. I mean, throw in a little special effects here and there, maybe a graphics package, something to make it look like my 15-yard out pattern isn't a floating duck. I mean, give me something to work with here, because it wasn't too appealing to the Johns Hopkins staff, and I just decided to walk on against their will. So, I mean, but if this story proves anything, it's that your kid needs to be a long snapper. The guy wasn't even a long snapper in junior college when he submitted this tape of his teammate, who was the long snapper. They offered him a scholarship, and he decided, all right, I guess I'm a long snapper now. Practice,
I guess I'll
all
learn
summer.
A trade.
Yeah, and now he's a professional long snapper with the freaking Eagles, and he's been there for years. So, I mean, if it's any question what your kid needs to be, a long snapper. You're not going to get hit. It's illegal to get hit. I mean, is there any question which way?
It's hard. Have you ever tried to long snap, Neil?
It's impossible.
I think it's an impossible thing. I don't believe that any of them exist.
If I didn't know people could do it, I would think it was impossible.
That's an impossible task. I can name you 4,000 other athletic ventures that I'm like, I think I could, if enough practice, I could do that. I could never long snap. That's impossible.
I wouldn't put anything past you. You know, I had a buddy of my dad's as a kid. I'll never forget it. He was a former coach, assistant coach at McMahon. He told me, if you want to be a professional athlete, learn how to punt or kick a football. So now, I mean, maybe he just left out long snapping.
Yeah, because he wanted that for his kid.
Yeah, for his kid to send out lies to people about what he can do.
All right, Neil, what else you got, brother?
Well, you want to talk about being brutally honest and not fibbing on your resume at all. There was a man who applied to the University of North Dakota head coaching job, and he cited playing Madden as experience.
I did see that story. I didn't even read it. I just saw the headline and figured that was great. And then that's like, Dan, you should be sending your resume out to every NHL team. I mean, how many hours have you logged on NHL for PlayStation or whatever?
Too many.
Too many.
Too many. Me and Rich from Huntington.
You and Rich from Huntington.
Yeah. I got news for you. If I could send out a resume of my exploits on NCAA Football 14, I'd be Army's hired.
We'd be shopping around for another.
I won the pistol with split backs.
Yeah.
Triple option out of that. Unstoppable. I beat Michigan the other day. That's
a big house.
What do you want me to
put that on your resume?
Yeah. So, yeah, I think that's great. Video games, they're great. I've told Coach Ireland before, you ever need me to draw up a play for you? I got it. And you know what it's based on? It's not when I played freshman football in high school. Based on my play call on the PS3, buddy.
That's it. The best thing about Coach Ireland is the guy's a successful high school coach, plays softball on O'Neill's, and he knows less than 90%, according to everybody else on that softball team that you guys are on.
Yeah.
Everybody else on that softball team knows more about football than him. It's
everybody.
Amazing.
I'm the only
you guys
guy on the team
know
that doesn't know more than him.
Everybody on the team, because they either watch football or they play Madden, know more than that poor guy.
And you want to know what a phony I am? There I am on Thanksgiving Day sitting there critiquing his call of the Wildcat offense like I know my
you hate
tail
it.
From a hole.
You are all over it.
All over
He's
it.
Angry about that.
I don't blame
he
him. I'll fight him.
Just fight
I'll
him.
Fight him.
Let's go. All right, Neil, what else you got, buddy? A couple more minutes.
Well, the Rams took down the Saints this past weekend. There was a story that came out before the game. It said that, you know, actually that Rob Ryan, the defensive coordinator for the Saints, is he the Saints coordinator now? Yeah.
Yeah, he sure is.
He originally was going to accept, I guess he accepted the job with the Rams. And him and Jeff Fisher had a difference of opinion. And so he quit, and the first thing he did after he quit was he went across the street and he had a Big Mac at McDonald's. But here's my question to you. If you had to quit your current job, what is your immediate post-quit meal that you would shove down your gullet?
Well, I'll tell you, I work up in New Haven. I work construction up in New Haven, and we get the best pizza in America. I would walk right down to Sally's of Pete's and get a nice white clam pizza and just take the whole thing to my face.
How good is that pizza?
Oh, my goodness. I mean, until you have it, it sounds disgusting. If you're ever in New Haven, if you're listening to the show and you're ever in New Haven, white clam pizza, it's outstanding. So that's exactly what I would do.
I'd wash
it down with a pitcher of beer.
I'd go chicken parm at a very underrated place, Stanford Pizzeria in Stanford, Connecticut.
Chicken parm. They got in early and just decided we're going to be Stanford's Pizzeria.
It's phenomenal.
Probably 300 pizzerias in Stanford, Connecticut. And they just said, we're Stanford Pizzeria.
I've had chicken parm down on Arthur Avenue.
Yeah.
Pales in comparison.
Is that right?
I swear to God.
I don't like Stanford, so I don't go down there.
I'm not a big fan of Stanford either, but I go in there for my chicken parm.
So you're like sandwiched. Darien is sandwiched right between Stanford and Norwalk.
Correct.
So you are like Norwalk people don't like Stanford people, whatever. Like, you know, rivalries growing up, two cities next to each other. You're sandwiched right in between.
Yeah.
You're siding with Norwalk. You're a Norwalk above Stanford guy or no? Especially now that you've been surrounded by some Norwalk guys, are you changing your mind?
I don't want to use the word hate for that other town, but it's close. And my dad grew up here in Norwalk.
So you're a Norwalk guy.
Always. But my whole family lives here.
So what's your – I like – every week now, Neil gives us, like, if we're on death row, what would our final meal be? This is if we quit, what our – I think that should be, like, we're just Neil's meals in different situations.
Yeah.
So what's your meal, Neil?
This is tough because I'm in an area where it's all pompous, pretentious New York bull crap that you don't get with your bang for your buck.
You're going to get some Thai fusion or something, like some Asian fusion over there in Hoboken.
Yeah, like it's, you know, it's tough. Around me, they shut down the Qdoba by work. I was going to go there and maybe go hog wild on some burritos, but that's not a possibility at this point. They shut down Uncle Moe's, another burrito place right around the corner. That would have been nice to shove some salsa in my gull. And, you know, it's tough. I mean, there's nothing that's really like victorious post-quit meal status. I mean, I guess I could make the trek to Shake Shack and just go, you know, go nuts and go bananas there. So that's a possibility, Shake Shack. But then, you know what? I'd have to cut the line. I'd have to tell people, I'm sorry, I quit. I got to cut the line.
So, Neil, you got one more. We got about 2 minutes before we got to bring Chris Heron on and take a quick break. So you got one more quick one for us?
Yeah, there's a new liquor out. It's called Vodkila. Vodkila? Vodkila. It's vodka and tequila, and it's pre-mixed. It's together. It's sold in New England. Your thoughts?
It sounds disgusting. I'm not a guy. I never really was one of those guys that, like, I mean, I like to have a cocktail, but I'm not a guy who's just like, let's just mix everything. You know, I like to drink a night. I like, you know, scotch, or I like whiskey. I like beer. I don't know. I mean, that just sounds like a punishment. They might as well just say punishment. This is the name of that alcohol should be.
You know how people go for those, like, fruity drinks? I mean, actual fruity drinks and stuff. The closest I ever got to that was, like, gin and pineapple juice. It was, like, one of my favorites.
Anything with pineapple juice.
It was one of my favorites. But I am like you. I'm a brown liquor.
Yeah.
I was a brown liquor and beer guy. Big fan.
Yeah.
Big fan.
Brown liquor.
Brown liquor. I like
brown
that.
Brown liquor.
Neil, Tony loves that. All right, Tony, let's take a quick commercial break. We're going to come back. We're going to bring on the great Chris Heron, Boston Celtics fame and all. We'll be with the Tri-State Sports guys. We'll be right back.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Golf Tournament Quiet Sign Holder Upper.
Mr. Golf Tournament Quiet Sign Holder.
Boldly you patrol the line between order and anarchy, armed with only your wits, your resolve, and your tiny cardboard sign stapled to a stick.
Actually, I glued it on.
You protect professional golfers from what they fear most, idle chit-chat, 200 yards away.
Stop breathing so loud now.
Because you know there's one thing this spectator sport could really do without. Spectators.
Get them out.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, oh salt another shush. We'll keep singing your praises as long as you keep telling us to shut up.
Mr. Carlson, I'm a quiet sign on the road.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
All right, we're back. Tri-State Sports Guys on a Wednesday night. It's probably going to be our last live show of 2013. I think we're going to add in some little short videos, some takes on things. That's why I didn't really want to do like big picks. Like we could do our Super Bowl picks this week, but it's kind of pointless. Next week's obviously Christmas, then we have New Year's Day, so it'll be a little difficult to do a show on those nights, being family men like we are. But we're going to be joined very shortly by Chris Herron, who, I mean, basketball fans know him, and even just sports fans in general, or even non-sports fans. I mean, my wife knew who he was when I told her he was going to be on. We talk about the 30 for 30s on our site a decent amount, and I'm not a guy who's watched a million of them. This is one of the ones I've seen. I've seen three of them. This is one of the three I've seen, and it was just outstanding. And when I knew we were going to have him on, I watched it again, and it was better the second time. And, it really, to me, was one of those ones that really put 30 for 30s on the map. And it was nominated for Academy Awards, and it was just an amazing story of, redemption-type story. But it was like on every twist and turn, you just felt for this guy. Like, you just want to, like, what are you doing? Just, you know, it was an amazing thing. And so we're going to bring him on shortly. But it reminded me, is before you joined us, we had a guy, Bert Berrykill, who writes for Vice Magazine, and he has the same problem. So my buddy Pat Cummings, who's been on the show a couple times, did a documentary on him for Vice, and he's a writer for Vice, but he was in and out of jail with drugs, like, constantly. And the documentary was insane because you watch it, and you're like, this seems like a guy like any one of your buddies. And he was very open about his addiction and his problems, and he just, every time you're watching, you're rooting for him, but he always seemed to just fall back in the same habits. He would meet with his parole officer and then, you know, come back and have problems type thing. And it was just, you know, it was very difficult to watch, and you see something like that. And you get that same sense when you watch Unguarded, because you're watching it and you're just like, you know, we all have a buddy like that.
Yep.
That's like you're friends with him and you don't know what the line is between should I be hard and it's like, you know, tough love type thing, or should I just be there for him? And as you watch it, you could relate. This, anybody that watches that documentary knows a guy like Chris Herron. Maybe obviously not the kind of basketball player he was, but that type of guy. Everybody liked him and that type of thing. So, amazing story. So I'm actually very excited to talk to him about it. I mean, did you watch the documentary again before having, you know, coming up?
Yeah, I mean, I use the word favorite to describe that documentary, and it's not because the story is necessarily fun to watch. But what is great to see is, as you said, we all know someone who's been affected by addiction of some sort. But to see him battle through it time and time again, fall off, back, battle back, and then to right himself.
Yeah.
And to admit to the fact that it is a daily struggle and every day is just one day at a time, I think it's a really uplifting story because of how it turned out. You know, it didn't turn out like a Len Bias type story or something tragic.
Yeah.
It turned out to be a deal where, you know, he's a man's man. He got his life together.
Yeah. And
you know,
watching
it
second time now that I have a couple kids and you watch that, it, to me, added a whole different dimension to it, having two little kids. Well, joining us now on the Tucci Lumber Hotline, Chris Herron. Chris, are you with us?
I am.
Hey, Chris, I really appreciate you calling in here on a Wednesday. I appreciate your time. I know you're really busy. Before we get into your foundation and everything that you got going on, I sit next to one of the biggest college basketball fans in Connecticut. And you're a UConn Husky Nation over here. This guy's a Kansas Jayhawk fan. And he wanted to do this whole interview just talking about what a great basketball player you are. So I want to turn it over to my co-host here, Dan Santarella. Let him talk a little college basketball first. This is Danny.
Sure.
Chris, it's Dan here. I was talking to my co-host Mike before the show, and I was mentioning how I followed Jimmer Fredette when he was at BYU, and he won the Naismith Award in 2011. And I'm not trying to pump sugar up your keister here, but I thought, and I still think, you were a million times better than that kid, and it gets so overshadowed by all the things you've been through. Just talk a little bit about, you know, how you maybe feel like people don't pay attention to your career because of your off-the-court issues, and, you know, how good you actually were in college. I mean, I know you don't want to toot your own horn, but you were an impressive guy to watch.
Yeah, I mean, you know, listen, it's Jim Fredette and those guys, it was a different time. You know, when I played, social media wasn't, you know, available, and there wasn't as much involvement in college basketball because we didn't have that Instagram and Facebook and Twitter and so on and so forth. So, you know, the people who watched my games were true fans. You know, I mean, you had to stay up late on the East Coast to see it. And so the people who remember my career are the ones who are true basketball fans and ones who are really, you know, into the game. And, you know, for me, I don't like tooting my own horn. Listen, I can give you a bucket. You know, I could play. I put a lot of work into it, and you know, it paid off for me in the end. You know, when it came to basketball and getting drafted into the NBA, not too many 6'1" white guys do. And you know, but my substance abuse and my lifestyle off the court ultimately got the best of me.
Yeah, Chris, I did. I am one of those guys that follows basketball. It's affected my grade point average over the years and things like that because I would stay up and watch those Fresno games, you know what I mean? And
yeah, of course.
Yeah, just talk a little bit about Coach Tarkanian because he's a guy I've always found to be a polarizing figure. I'm a fan of his. I like the fact that he gives guys like yourself second chances. You can see in Unguarded just how close you two seem to be. Talk a little bit about him just as a coach and how, in my opinion, he gets overlooked because of the fact that he's willing to give guys second and third chances, and they don't even pay attention to how good a coach he is.
Oh, you know, I just did an interview on Fox a couple of days ago about Coach Chalk, and, you know, he is, you know, one of the, you know, he's in the top five, I believe, winningest coaches of all time, or top 10, you know, he did it at Long Beach State. He did it at Fresno State. He did it at UNLV. He didn't do it at Indiana, UCLA, Duke, North Carolina. He didn't have the luxury of that brand behind him. So, you know, where he was able to win are places that most people, you know, weren't and aren't able to. And that says a lot in itself. So, you know, the NCAA did everything to discredit his career. Ultimately, at the end, I think he won that battle, and I think that's why the Hall of Fame finally recognized him. I've said it many times. If I was a coach going into the Hall of Fame, I'd be embarrassed to be inducted before Coach Talk.
That's a great point. I mean, we talk about Hall of Fame. This is Mike DePalma again, Chris. We talk about Hall of Fame talk all the time. And I would – same thing. I mean, we talk about Baseball Hall of Fame a lot, and there's times when there's guys that are in over guys that aren't, and you say, you almost got to be embarrassed because you played with some guy. These guys coached against Tark. How could you get in and a guy like Tark can't?
I'd be embarrassed. I mean, if I was a college coach going in over the last couple of years and to say, like, okay, I'm going to get on stage and I'm going to do my thing, but – what about Coach Tark? You know, it's just, it's baffling. So, you know, he finally got his due. And what was great was that his family was able to be there to witness it. I mean, Coach Tark has great grandkids, you know. I mean, it's amazing that they were able to be part of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Chris, a lot of the world outside of the diehard basketball fans like my co-host Danny here or people up in New England here in Connecticut were really introduced to your story with the 30 for 30 Unguarded and all. So how was your life changed when that came out? I mean, I know you had already started to turn things around, obviously, before it came out. But, I mean, was that a thing where, you know, the day that thing aired, your life changed immediately? Talk a little bit about that process. Did you know when you were filming it this was going to be a real life-changing moment?
No, I really didn't know the power of television until Unguarded came out. I really didn't. You know, I was already on, like, a little tour because of the book that came out. So I was already on the road and speaking, but as soon as that aired, the amount of phone calls and emails and requests coming in for me to come in and speak at schools or,
our college campuses or to teams increase drastically. And it's been great. And, you know, John Hawk, Alex Evans, you know, at Hawk Films, they changed my life. They really did, and ESPN as well. So I'm not afraid to say that. You know, it's pretty remarkable the power that that film had over my life, and not only my life, but many, many others who have been impacted by watching it. I mean, Unguarded is the, you know, I'm proud to say it, it's the number one film in all treatment centers in America. You know, I mean, they play it all the time. And if one person walks out of a treatment center saying, wow, if he could do it, I can do it, you know, it's worth it.
Yeah, I was saying as we were introducing you, getting you on, that I feel like anybody watching that show feels like they know you, because we all have a friend or a family member that has gone through substance abuse. I have very, very close friends now. I'm in my early 30s who are still battling with it. I have family members who are battling with severe addiction. And so my question to you is, I know a lot of the, you know, the story is about prevention and getting ahead of it, the people before they get into that issue. But for a guy like me who, you know, might have a family member or a good buddy, like, you never know where that line is. Am I supposed to play the card of, you know, tough love? How do you ever do that to somebody that you do love? And then the other thing is, if I'm too soft, then I'm an enabler. So what do you tell people in my situation that have friends or family members? What's the way to do it? Is there a way for me? Like, what am I supposed to be doing for those, you know, for those friends?
Well, I mean, the reality to that, I mean, you're a billionaire if you can find that line. You know, that's like the you're a billionaire if you can identify the enabling and the non-enabler. You know, it kind of goes case to case, but how I tell people is this: you know, you help until it hurts you. You know, at the end of the day, you got to help until it's really hurting your well-being. You know, I have family members who struggle with addiction. You know, and I'm going to help them. I'm going to go to the end until it's putting myself in jeopardy, and putting my recovery at risk. You know, you can look at it. Bill Reynolds, who wrote the book Basketball Junkie with me, and he wrote the book Four of a Dream. He's played every role in my life. He's been a father figure, an uncle, a brother, a friend. But, you know, I'm very honest about how he helped me financially and how he, you know, would meet me and give me $50 or $100. And, you know, he apologized to me later on when I first got sober, and he cried, and he said, you know, I'm so sorry for prolonging this. And I said, listen, if you didn't, I'd probably be in prison for robbing something, you know. So you never know, you know. His enabling for me, I can look at today as a lifesaver, you know, or preventing me from going down the path of committing crime in my addiction and so on and so forth.
Chris, it's Dan again. I was just curious because I've seen Unguarded quite a few times. I don't know if you play this game with yourself or if you let yourself go there, but you know you mentioned guys like Van Exel and those guys that helped you out so much in Denver. Do you think it would have maybe turned out differently if you'd stayed there and not been traded to Boston, or do you just not go there? You're just only focused on your recovery now.
Yeah, no, of course you go there, but you know my addiction was started long before Denver. It was in remission for the most part in Denver. I had a really solid group of guys. I was blessed to play on that team. You got guys like Roy Rogers, who's an assistant coach with the Nets. You have Van Exel, who's in Milwaukee. You got Nick Dice and, you know, Ryan Bowen's an assistant coach. I just had a bunch of solid dudes on that team. Those police sirens aren't coming for me, fellas.
My God.
I'm right on the street in New York City talking, so I apologize.
That's all right.
So the thing is, listen, you know, could have been different, of course. You know, hindsight, looking back, could it have changed things if I stayed? Absolutely. But, you know, the blessing in my story and my recovery is that I lost it all so I could help, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I mean, I think your story obviously is one of redemption, and now, you know, you've been sober for several years. My question is, you know, we see guys like Josh Hamilton, who's got that same type of redemption story, but seems to every once in a while, every few years, have a relapse. How is your recovery going? Do you feel it's getting easier? Do you feel like you're always one bad, you know, decision away, one bad, you know, acquaintance away from falling back, or is it something that is a struggle every day?
Nah, struggle every day was being on the corner. You know, struggle every day was trying to make, you know, $10 turn into 20, you know, or you know, that's the struggle, chasing around dope, you know, to feel well. Recovery is not a struggle for me, you know, but I do what I'm told in recovery. You know,
yeah.
I've humbled myself enough to become coachable. You know, I tell people all the time, like, I played for some of the greatest coaches, Pacino, Tarkanian, and I was really never coachable. And I became coachable, truly coachable, when I got in recovery. And I listened to people who have done it before me and tell me what to do, and I do it. You know, and doing that, you know, you never say you want to guarantee you, but it gives you the best shot at staying sober one day at a time, and that's what I do.
You know, Chris, I was saying also before you came on about how I watched it when the documentary first aired, and then I watched it again in preparation for you coming on the show, and I watched it as a different person. I think there's some similarities in this that I married my high school sweetheart. I've got two little girls now, 2.5 and 4 months, and you know, as I'm watching it, I took it under the, like, just how amazing your wife was through this whole thing. And you know, I looked at it more as like a father and a husband as I did a sports fan the first time. I mean, to me, that's the saving grace right there, that your wife was there. I mean, she got a lot of credit in that documentary, but God, she couldn't get enough, in my opinion, for and the love that she had, right?
Yeah, that's what everybody says, and rightfully so. You know, I mean, listen, nobody really took her vows more serious. You know, for richer, for poorer, sickness and in health, man, I was as sick as they get, and I was as poor as they got. And she stayed in it, you know, and I'm a dad today because of her. You know, I'm in New York City taking my kids to, you know, the Christmas show at Radio City tomorrow. You know, those were things I could only dream of doing or pretend I was going to do someday when I was on the street getting high. So, if it wasn't for my wife, none of this would be possible. And she's the best, man. I've known her since she was seventh grade.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fantastic story. And like I said, something, you know, I can relate to, and I think we're both blessed in that respect. Now, talk a little bit about what you're doing now. You know, obviously, Doc Ramsey, a few years ago, you've got a lot of things going on. You've got the Aaron project there. Talk a little bit about what you're doing. I mean, I know you're traveling the countryside talking to kids, but it seems like you're doing a little bit more than just that. So talk a little bit about, like, an average week for Chris Heron right now.
I'm on the road, you know, I sometimes Monday through Friday, you know, I speak to all levels. You know, if I'm doing the NFL rookies or I'm flying in to do the Patriots or the Green Bay Packers to high schools on Long Island and Staten Island. So, you know, the faces change, the age changes, but the story doesn't, and the story affects all, you know, like you said during your interview that, you know, someone's affected by it, you know, someone we know. And then I started the Heron Project. You know, I know when I was on my last day, I was unable to be treated because I didn't have the right insurance and I didn't have enough money in my bank account. So, I don't like that. I think it's inhumane to treat people suffering from addiction and only offer them the average length of treatment in our country for opiate addicts is 6 days. So you can have a raging heroin problem for 15 years, and they're going to give you 6 days to fix it. And to me, that's unacceptable. So I started a Heroin Project, which raises money to pay for people who can't afford treatment to go in and get the help they need. And we were able to do that right now at a pace of every 7 days. So every week we send a family away. And hopefully someday we'll be sending, you know, 10 families a day. And that's what it's all about.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fantastic thing, and obviously anything we could do on our end to raise money, we definitely will. Right before you came on, we posted the link to your site on our website, because that's the type of cause, you know, it's impossible to not get behind, because you're exactly right. You know, everybody's been affected by something like this, but people want to kind of turn their eyes away, because they don't want to see what it really takes to get somebody through it. And so, that's a great project. And I know you're a busy guy. I really appreciate you coming on a Wednesday to call into a podcast. I know your brother had a podcast. He did some internet radio, Hurricane Radio. So, I think you understand what we're going through, trying to get something off the ground. So, you know, to do that, I really appreciate it. Now, what's your brother up to now? He's helping you out with the project?
Yeah, he is. He's doing really well. Michael, he has a promotion, he does some promotional stuff for companies. He helps companies get off the ground and fundraise, and he's done a lot of work for me. So, anytime you guys need me, man, you have my cell phone number, shoot me a text. If I can help out in any way, I'd be more than happy to.
All right, I really appreciate it. And I started following your brother on Twitter. He's still a passionate sports fan, my own. And she was all over this game this Sunday.
Yeah, he knows more about it than me, man. Michael's one of the smartest guys I've ever been around. And, he loves his sports, and he can talk about anything. So, you think that I can help out in any way, I'd be more than happy to jump on with you guys.
All right, I really appreciate it, Chris. Enjoy the show tomorrow. Enjoy the city. I really appreciate it.
No doubt, man. I'll talk to you.
All right, Chris Herron. I mean, he just comes across like a down-to-earth guy.
Favorite interview right there.
Favorite interview. And we had Ernie Banks on.
Yeah, it's my favorite interview.
Yeah, he just seems like a real person. I think that's why that story, his story has so much legs to it. You know what I'm saying? It's like there's a million of those type of stories and a million public speakers of guys who went through struggles for whatever reason. And maybe it's his personality. Maybe that he was such a great athlete. It just seems so relatable when he tells it, and I think that's why it's so effective. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think sometimes I'm not going to try to be poetic because I'm not, but it's easy to get off the rails in life, and he did. And that's a guy that I always hate that when people say, if you've seen the Marinovich 30 for 30, the quarterback, whatever it was, where he said people would always come up to him and say, you wasted all your talent. And he'd go, whose was it to waste?
Yeah.
It was mine.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's why I would never ask a guy like Chris Herron about that, because that's not what it's about to me, the fact that he was such a super talented player. It's about the fact that he's just a man who had some problems. His life got off track. Who happened to be an unbelievable basketball player, and he was. I wasn't just saying that. He was one of the best college guards
I've ever seen. The guy dropped 2,500 points in high school.
Yeah, he's one of the best college guards I've ever seen, and I probably watched 15,000 games in my life. So I need hobbies. I need to get out and get more hobbies. But I think the story with him is redemption, like you said, about Hamilton or a guy like him. It's just about it really is a touching story. It's great.
And not to get sappy about it, but watching it as a father and seeing him talk about his kids, and missing the Burr system kids and being there, but, high or whatever it was, and then immediately leaving to go find another score. It was like, to me, watching it the second time was far harder to watch than it was the first time.
Yeah, life is difficult, and it was difficult for him. And he, had choices he made that weren't great, and they didn't work out well for him, obviously. But look where he is now. Yep. I mean, how about that conversation you have with a guy who's been through all that? It almost feels like he didn't go through it because he's so well-adjusted now.
Yeah, I know.
It's unbelievable. I'm pulling for him in every possible way. It's a great story.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, he is one of the good guys in sports. Yeah. All right, well, we're going to take another quick break. We come back. We start talking some NFL talk.
Did we play Ragnarok yet?
Oh, we did. Should we play it again? We always, when Tony's behind the glass, it's always first. That's his favorite ad. All right, so we'll be right back with the Tri-State Sports, because we'll get to some NFL stuff when we come back.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. T-Shirt Launcher Inventor.
Mr. T-Shirt Launcher Inventor.
Not satisfied with standard souvenir distribution, you created a device with enough kick to dislocate a mascot's shoulder.
Someone get a stretcher.
Courtside, luxury box, upper deck. Your high-powered cotton cannon makes every section the nosebleed section.
Hit the deck!
So simple, anyone can operate it. after a background check, a training course, and a five-day waiting period.
It only shoots t-shirts.
So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, marksman of the mezzanine, because we know you'll give us the shirt off your back at 180 feet per second.
Mr. T-Shirt Launcher in there.
Bud Light beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Oh, Marlon. We're back with the Tri-State Sports Guys. We gave Dan, I don't know where he found it. He's got a racquetball in the studio. And it is like when you give like a kitten like a ball of yarn. Yeah. Every time you turn your back, Dan's just going, oh, my God. And the ball's bouncing off of windows and walls in here. Dan.
I don't have the hands anymore. But
I just, right before we went back on air, oh, my God. And there's this ball bouncing all around the
studio.
You're
not going to be able to have me over anymore.
All right, Neil, I mean, what'd you think of the story? I mean, how many times have you seen that 30 for 30 unguarded, and what'd you think of it?
I actually have not seen it, so it's good to get that story. Well, you know, I never did my homework in school, and, you know, I just kind of continue on that tradition here at the show. But, you know, I definitely want to see it now to see what his journey is like. I mean, I got a pretty good picture from that interview, but I think it, you know, if I feel like wrenching my heart out, then yeah, I'll give it a look-see.
You're going to watch it, and there's definitely going to be a guy in your life, a buddy of yours from high school or college or from, you know, after you got out of college, you're like, I know this guy. Like, he's such a real person. It just seems, you know, although he was a ridiculously athletic guy, it doesn't come across in the way he acts and the way he is on draft night. Like, to me, that was one of the coolest things. He's sitting there in draft, like, when he was finally sober and he's getting drafted, he's just watching it in his house with his wife and his newborn baby. You know, it's a down-to-earth dude. So you got to watch it, Neil. It's a must-watch. I watched the whole thing. I didn't want to tell him. I watched it. Somebody posted the whole thing to YouTube, so they're stealing money from ESPN. And I just watched it on YouTube today again for another time.
That's good, though.
That's good. So let's talk some NFL, Neil, now. I think you are very unique in that you are a Giants fan who actually understands the limitations of Eli Manning. And you had floated around the idea a couple weeks ago of actually letting him sit for the last few weeks and letting him keeping him healthy, keeping him upright, and seeing what you have in Nassib for various reasons, almost like what they're doing in Washington. Because if Nassib is something, then you know what you have. You could either look to trade him or know you have a quarterback in the way in the wings there. But the majority of Giants fans, whether I talk to him personally or hear him calling up the fan or ESPN Radio or our show, all they want to do is make excuses for Eli Manning, and it's always the line. It's always guys that run in the right routes. Do you get that? I mean, when you're watching the Giants games at the bar or wherever you watch them, the majority of them on your end making excuses for a guy like Eli Manning?
Well, I think the excuses are they come from the media, and it trickles down to the fans because there's a lot of questions being posed by the media. And, you know, I mean, in watching the games, no, he doesn't have time to throw the ball. And it doesn't seem like he's on the same page with his receivers. And, you know, I guess there was a guy, a reporter or a columnist for the New York Daily News or one of the major papers. He actually broke down each of Eli's interceptions this year. And he's had a bunch, 25 or something like that. And he was able to somehow decipher that only 9 or 10 can really be pinned on Eli. Which, you know, we say that every week. There's always a bad bounce here, or, you know, the receiver didn't turn when they were supposed to, or they moved the wrong way. And you know, at this point, I think it's a combination of things. One is, yes, we do understand the limitations of Eli Manning. He isn't his brother. Okay, we can put that to bed now. Just put that debate to bed. Peyton's the better quarterback. Fine. You heard it here first. But that said, you give Eli a decent amount of time to throw. You give him receivers that are knowledgeable of the playbook and who actually give a crap, unlike Hakeem Nicks. Yeah, he's going to be a better-than-average quarterback. But, you know, I can't say, you know, in the grand scheme of things, you see all the games that he's played that he's an elite quarterback. You know, I can't say that at this point. I can say that he got hot in two playoff runs, and every other season outside of maybe two or three where he was putting up really great numbers, you know, I've never had that confidence in him. I've only had that confidence in him in 2011. was the only time I had, I was sheer confidence that I knew he was going to get the job done. And ever since then, it's been, you know, is this the downfall of Eli Manning? And his father came to his defense, Archie came to his defense and said, you know, it's the parts around him, but you can only blame the parts around you for so much. And, you know, the fact that anytime there's any kind of pressure on Eli, he crumples like a Jenga tower. Like, you know, the guy has to, and you're seeing the evolution of the quarterback, right? We're not the ways of Peyton Manning and Tom Brady. You're seeing the dusk. You know, this is the twilight. This is their decline. You know, the position is moving towards a mobile quarterback, a guy who can run, escape, elude pressure, and make plays a la Russell Wilson, Colin Kaepernick, etc. You can't have these pocket passers anymore. I really don't think that's the case. Even you look at, like, Aaron Rodgers or Ben Roethlisberger, they're still able to maneuver and make people miss. Eli Manning, other than that freaking play during the Super Bowl where he eluded the grasp of that one guy, hasn't eluded anyone in the history of the NFL.
This guy did get sacked by Jared Allen, who was being blocked and wrapping his arms around the lineman to sack him, which was the most amazing sack ever. I agree with you on a lot of your points. The only thing is, if you look at the last two Super Bowls, they were won by pocket passes with big arms. I don't think that it's as definitive as you need a mobile quarterback to win. I think it is, if you're going to be Eli Manning and you're going to play his style and Joe Flacco's style, and I've been saying it for 3 years that they are so similar in the way they play, because, you know, they'll look bad for three quarters but can hit home runs like nobody else. I think that you can win, but you have to be so perfect in your execution on the couple opportunities the game you had, and that's what he's been really good at. And I posted on our Facebook page 6 weeks ago that I felt the biggest difference in the Giants offense altogether. I know the line is worse, and I know you got problems with the key mix and Reuben Randall not knowing his assignments on different routes and all that. But the biggest thing to me that's impacted them is that I would have put Eli Manning's deep ball with or ahead of anyone in the league. When he had a guy man-to-man down the field, he threw a strike or he got the pass interference 90% of the time. And this year that's not the case. And of course, Giants fans killed me for it, saying I don't know what I'm talking about. But what do you think about that? I mean, he seemed to always, you look at like the Redskins game last year, when he got the opportunity, he hit, you know, Victor Cruz coming out of the slot down the seam for whatever 80-yard touchdown to win the game. He always seemed to make that play. And this year, when that play is, there's a couple of games that there's plays to be made down the field, they're not being made.
Absolutely. You know, and his accuracy has just been atrocious all season long, overthrowing Brandon Myers in the Chicago game to end that drive, that game-winning drive. He even in this game against the Seahawks, he throws high to Victor Cruz, and now Cruz is done for the season. You know, I mean, it's not even making pinpoint accurate passes in clutch situations. It's making accurate passes across the board. The guy has just not been accurate. I mean, he's supposed to lead Hakeem Nicks on that crossing route in which they got picked off. And, you know, Hakeem should fight for that ball. But at the same time, that ball is poorly thrown. It needs to be thrown out in front of him. So, I mean, it's not even like he's just been inaccurate the entire time. And a lot of people are saying it's because he's been getting hit so much this year. It's not just the sack total. It's the hurries. It's the knockdowns. It's the lack of a pocket that has got him very rattled. And when he's very rattled, he makes very poor decisions and makes even worse passes.
Yeah, I think, you know, you put him in a situation like we talked about, like he's had maybe the last 4 or 5 years, solid offensive line, weapons to work with. He's as good as anybody. The reason, you know, I've always been saying he wasn't elite is because when you put a guy like Brady or Breeze or Peyton in that situation, where he's in now, where maybe you don't have all those weapons, they're not going to put up a performance over the course of a season like Eli is. Now, the thing I'm more, you know, not concerned with, but I'm more surprised with out of you, is that you think that this is actually the beginning of possibly an extended bad era for the Giants. I just find that organization is so well run from the Maras right down then I don't see them going through an extended lull of, like, you know, 6-7 win seasons. You really think that's a possibility out of the Giants?
I mean, you look at management since that first, that 2007 draft. I mean, who have they picked up that has made a difference? I mean, the John Beeson move was good, and that was a stopgap. And I feel like he can be a contributor. I don't know that you're going to get another great year out of him like you. And this year was okay. I mean, he was a good linebacker, which is they didn't even have an average linebacker before. So, you know, in my mind, it's like I just look around the league. I look at who they're probably not going to re-sign, who they're going to lose, and who is available. And then I look at, like, their draft, you know, their drafting history of late has been pretty awful. And it just, you get a bad taste in your mouth, you know? And I don't know if it's just, it takes another year for this new line to gel. But, I mean, I can very easily see them having an equally bad 2014 campaign. And at that point, you know, you got to show Coughlin the door because, you know, people are already saying that players are turning on them. So unless Coughlin can identify the cancers in the locker room and the clubhouse and say, hey, pack your bags, see you later, we don't need your kind, and he's able to identify the kind of players that will adopt the mindset that the rest of the team has and believe in what he has to offer, I just don't know. Sometimes, you know, Colin Cowherd was saying this earlier in the week, you know, sometimes the message just gets stale. It doesn't matter how talented you are or what you've done in the past. It's kind of like it just becomes white noise to some people. And so, in my mind, that's the beginning of the end, and that's the sign of a rebuilding period. And it, unfortunately, Eli is going to have to take the brunt of it. And that's why I don't understand why they're still playing him. Sit him down and give Nassib the chance to show what he can do, because at the very least, maybe you can make a draft day play where you could say, who needs an arm, a young arm, and you can maybe deal Nassib. Now it's like he's got two games to play. Maybe he has two games. I don't know. I just feel like now you're jeopardizing Eli Manning's future because of what? For what? The stupid record that he has?
Well, I think there's this prevailing thought that, and I think old school guys like Tom Coughlin have, and that's like the integrity of the league, that you are required to play your best quarterback, your best players throughout the end of the season, because the team you're playing might have some playoff implications. And so you owe it to the league. And I get that to an extent. And you owe it not, you know, to your fans or whatever it is. I think the fans would be fine with it because of your point. But I think there is this old school mentality that you never want to not put your best team on the field because the team you're playing might be playing for something and it's not fair to the other teams in the hunt. So I don't think that's going to happen for that reason. But my question is, you know, they're going to wind up with a pretty decent draft pick. Clearly, their biggest need is offensive line, in my opinion. You know, they got some issues on defense, but, you know, I think, like you know, the pickup like Beeson is good for them, and he's going to be there for a while. I just don't know. I mean, you get a top-10 pick, are you using another offensive lineman? Is that the Giants' style? I don't know. What do you think? I mean, there seem to be a best guy on the board type team, always, even when they drafted, you know, David Wilson. That's been their mentality. They don't draft to need. They draft to who the best player on the board is. If their need is a lineman and their best player available is not a lineman, do they change their ways to do that with a top-10 pick? What do you think they're going to do?
I mean, you know, I think there are plenty of good linemen to go around, and that's the crazy part of this whole scenario is, you know, they could very easily find a guy that goes undrafted, you know, and pick up an undrafted free agent. But the odds of that happening and being successful are slim. So, I mean, you know, do you really want to invest so much in a top, you know, the first round tackle who's just a big guy that is just dominates? Or do you want to go after someone that's a playmaker, a wide receiver like Sammy Watkins and trade up for him or, you know, I don't know. I just feel like, you know, maybe it's Marquise Lee from USC, and I don't know. To me, it's like, you know, I don't know that Ruben Randall showed flashes of promise. Victor Cruz obviously needs someone to compliment him. He's not a Megatron that can go out there and catch 20 balls for 200 yards. Not many people can. But, you know, they need that third receiver to take some of the heat off Cruz. And, you know, I don't know that Brandon Myers is the solution. And, you know, I don't know that I have complete faith in Andre Brown. Dude hasn't played a full season yet. So, I mean, running back is a situation, is another area where you got to have address. So I just feel like there are too many positions that are need positions at this point, and it's going to take more than a year to figure it out.
Yeah, I agree with you that there are needs. I think that they are going to be, although offensive line to me is their biggest need, they're going to draft the best guy on the board, barring a quarterback. I don't see them getting a quarterback, even if Johnny Football's there or something like that. But moving away from the Giants, but sticking with the NFC East, there's two real races to me there's a couple races still going on. Obviously, you have the one seed and all those different things. But the two races that are most interesting are who's going to get that sixth seed in the AFC and who's going to win the NFC East. Both of them, you know, you look at you're going to wind up with both. Whoever gets in on both sides are going to be some flawed teams. I obviously am a little biased to be pulling for the Cowboys because I had picked them before the season to win the NFC East. But, you know, you watch them and you're like, man, as much as I defend Tony Romo, and you could put as much as you want on the defense blowing that lead, he lost that game for him last week. There's no way around it. So even if both teams, even if they win this week and make it a play-in game that, you know, week 17 there, I don't see them beating the Eagles, even as flawed as the Eagles are. So who do you think wins the NFC East?
I mean, I honestly have to go with the Eagles. I just don't think the Cowboys can get their act together, even though the Eagles come out and they get stunned by the Vikings. You know, I think you can attribute that victory more to Matt Castle stepping up and playing like he wants the job. You know, I think Vikings fans, and maybe Dan can speak to this a little bit, they feel a little more confident in Castle than they do Ponder or you know, Morgan Freeman, whatever the hell the other guy's name is. Whatever happened to that dude? That guy just disappeared off the face of the earth. He had like a hip bruise, and all of a sudden he's like sidelined for the rest of the year. Anyway, I got to go with the Eagles just because I feel like they've got – their offense has – I mean, Nick Foles, can we talk about him for a second? Dude doesn't throw interceptions. He throws touchdowns, no interceptions. That's his style of play. And, you know, and can you imagine if the Eagles had – you know, who knows what Nick Foles' legacy lays and goes from here. So, but, I mean, I just feel like the offensive attack that the Eagles have and their defense is slightly better than Dallas, so I give them the edge.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you as hard as it is for me to say that. Now, as hard as it was for me to say I think the Eagles are going to win, it's becoming abundantly clear for me in the AFC that sixth seed is going to go to the Miami Dolphins, who we did our article, Danny, about who had the best chance of winning a playoff game. I still don't think the Dolphins are going to win a playoff game, but we had completely written them off. About, you know, when all that stuff was going on, regardless of the off-the-field issues, they were a mediocre team, and they lost 40% of their offensive line. The job that Philbin has done there is amazing. I mean, I know they're beating world beaters, but they're winning their games. They're now going to play Buffalo, who's not going to be with E.J. Manuel. And then they finish the season at home against the Jets. I mean, the Ravens had to play the Patriots. The Miami Dolphins are going to make the playoffs, dude. Are you in agreement with that, Danny?
Well, I only know that because I was watching a little bit of the NFL Network the other day. Excuse me. And they were talking about...
Was it halftime of the Kansas game?
It must have been. It had to be something. They were talking about Philbin as the coach of the year.
It can't be anyone else. I don't care about Andy Reid. I know Andy Reid's got a great story, 2-14 team. They were the best 2-14 team, 2-14 team in the history of the NFL. And then, you know, they make some moves. I like what he's done. The job Philbin has done, to me, if they make the playoffs, it's historically good.
Yeah, it's impressive. I will say that. I mean, as you know, I mean, this is your expertise. Especially right in your wheelhouse. It's the AFC East.
It's the AFC East. I could tell you everybody.
You wrote him off.
I wrote him off.
What do I know?
I wrote him off. And I was a guy before the season. I liked him.
Yeah.
I remember I said, I'm like, look, I think Tannehill's a real player. I thought Wallace would be good. He wasn't good for so long, but... during this all this turmoil, he found himself. The defense has been pretty solid all year. You know, it's amazing. But they right now they're in position. I mean, if you're a betting man right now, you got to say the Dolphins are going to make the playoffs. Neil, no?
Yeah, it looks that way, and it's kind of stinks because I kind of like the Ravens and the Bengals, you know, and I'd hate to see one of those teams leave, even though the Bengals have kind of really disappointed people over the last couple of weeks. You know, it sucks to see one of those teams go. But, yeah, I mean, you know, considering all the turmoil that team had over the course of the season, for them to bounce back and perform like they did and with a pretty much a no-name team. The guys, Mike Wallace doesn't even know his own teammates. Did you hear that?
No. What's he got, a little Ricky Henderson in him?
Yeah, he's got a little Ricky Henderson in him. The guy who picked off Brady to clinch the game last weekend, I mean, like half the team never even heard of him. So, I mean, it's just like this. You don't talk about a no-name defense. It's a no-name team, and they're turning heads.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be even off more. Make this whole thing just as devastating as it could possibly be. I'm going to be at that stadium watching the Dolphins beat the Jets to make the playoffs. It's going to ruin my New Year. It's going to ruin my trip with my wife.
And yet you're wearing like a little Dolphins-colored T-shirt almost.
Yeah.
This is very green, bro.
No,
this is a green shirt.
You got to talk to your wife about whatever.
Yo, if you don't think this is a green shirt.
No, I got perfect eyesight except for one. And that's not green, Tom. Thank you.
You are crazy. I'm wearing a green shirt. I'm going to take a picture and post it on our page, and I'll let anybody else judge it, see what's going on. Before we're going to get to say what in a minute, we're going to take a quick call, try to squeeze it in here. Tucci Lumber Hotline, you're on line two. You're on with the Tri-State Sports Guys.
Hello?
Hello, we got you?
Hey, yeah, it's Paul from Brantford. How are you guys doing?
My man, Paul from Brantford. Did you catch the Kansas basketball interview earlier?
No, I didn't hear the interview earlier. I was just calling in because I knew you guys were on tonight.
What do you got for us? We talked to Bob Davis, the announcer for Kansas basketball, and basically, you know, I just sat down on the couch and had a cocktail while Dan talked about how great Andrew Wiggins was.
Hey, he does look good this year. I mean, it's a shame we're only going to have him for 1 year, but, you know, we have a few good freshmen this year, but I was actually calling in to talk about the Yankees tonight. I don't know if you guys are still talking about that.
Yeah, we got into the Yankees. What do you got? Yeah, we could talk to the Yankees again.
Well, I was looking at some numbers today, and I actually posted this on social media today that last year they had over 880 innings out of Sabathia, Corona, Pettit, Hughes, and Nova, which is basically their starting five.
Yep.
And they also got 475 innings, the pitchers who left, which obviously were Andy Pettit, Phil Hughes, Mariano Rivera, Jobber Chamberlain, and Boone Logan. So I was just curious what your guys' thoughts were. I mean, they have Sebastian Corona coming back, but and obviously Nova. But I was just curious how you guys thought, you know, they're spending all this money on outfielders, and I heard they almost got Shinsu Chu today. You know, how are they going to replace all these inning eaters? I mean, they really don't have anybody on the payroll right now.
Yeah, Paul, I agree with you, and thanks for the call. Now, I honestly think that it's a big problem for the Yankees. The idea that they – and I said this on our Facebook page. People want to bash Boone Logan. Can't get a lefty out. The guy – lefties hit .220 against him last year. He had better numbers than Matt Thornton, and yet they signed Matt Thornton to save less than $2 million a year. And the Yankees like that move somehow. Let Boone Logan go to Colorado because he'll get rocked out there. He might get rocked out there, but he wasn't getting rocked for the Yankees. Had an ERA in the low threes. He's 9 years younger than Matt Thornton. Thornton's numbers, I mean, he was dominant 4 years ago as a lefty setup guy, throwing very hard and even closing for a little bit, although he wasn't successful there. But his ERA is going up each of the last 2 years, and his strikeout numbers have fallen precipitously in the last 2 years to the point where you know, he was averaging well over 9 per 9 innings. Now, last year he was down in the sixes. I just think that like they replace these guys, and all of a sudden these Yankees are pinching pennies at the weirdest times. And I think anybody could agree with letting Phil Hughes go, and I do think he'll be successful. outside of Yankee Stadium. But I think that they haven't addressed their pitching problems. I really don't think they have. I mean, you got CeCe. They got Kuroda's a year older after coming off of the terrible second half. You know, Andy Bennett was old, but he gave you what he gave you. You know, I don't know what they're going to do here. Are they going to hope Pineda comes back and just is the pitcher that they traded for? I don't know, Danny. What do you think?
Is he ever going to pitch? That's my honest question. You know, the real thing that I was thinking about while you were talking was I read the other day in the, I believe it was the Daily News, that they gave the Colorado Rockies a D for their offseason moves.
The Rockies?
They gave the Rockies, I forget who the writer was, and I think it was the Daily News, for the Morneau, Logan, and then Brett Anderson trade. They gave him a D.
I like every one of them.
So did
I. Like
and
every single one.
I'm just
one
mentioning
of those
it because we're talking about Logan. I don't know where the Yankees are going to get those innings from. I mean, we've talked about how fickle bullpens can be.
Yeah.
So it could be somebody unbelievable steps up.
Yeah, it could be a guy
Robertson
we've heard
has
of,
like an unbelievable another unbelievable year or whatever. But
the bottom line is they replaced Boone Logan with
Jordan.
That's a step back.
It looks like one, but that's kind of what I'm getting at.
Matt Thurman's going to be 38 years old next year.
I understand that, but I'm
and
just
he's
saying.
He's a hard-throwing lefty. He's not Jamie Moyer.
I understand that. I'm just saying.
But you're not understanding me.
I'm absolutely understanding
just
you. You're Dolphins t-shirt.
Yeah, I mean, just say that I'm right.
No.
Once, dude.
I'm not saying you're wrong, either.
Just say his shirt is green, at
it's
least.
It's not. It's at least Tony Teal.
Definitely.
Thank you.
Oh, fuck. Teal.
Yeah, we're just, you know.
It's a green shirt. I'm going to take this shirt off.
We're not to the Dolphins-Jets game and tell me who the people think you're rooting for.
I'll be tearing me off on their shoulders.
Please. No, I'm just saying that it's easy to look at everything you said about why Logan is the better pitcher to have on your team. All I'm saying is forget that he's going to Coors Field where his numbers will probably go up, but you don't know which one of those two guys is going to be good. That's all I'm saying, and everybody's trashing it. But he asked where the innings are going to come from. Where are the innings going to come from? Are they going to sign this Japanese guy? Are they going
to? Really
you know what I mean? So
they're really putting all their marbles in Tanaka, which I would think, I mean, he is the best guy out there right now. They're putting all their marbles in that. They have not had a huge success of signing pitchers from Asia.
How funny will it be if the Yankees are just reeling this year? I mean, seriously, think about that for a second.
Well, here's
for their fans.
I just want to. I want everyone to remember. We need to start taking screen grabs of our Facebook page because all these Yankee fans that love. I think it's fine that they don't want to give out these crazy contracts. Fine. You don't want to give out those crazy contracts. Then don't expect to make the playoffs 18 out of the next 20 years because it's not going to happen. That's how you do it. You throw a bunch of money out. Some of it doesn't stick, and you don't care if it doesn't stick because you'll just throw more money at it.
But what about their fantastic development in the minor leagues?
Which has been fantastic.
It's been unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, look how they easily filled in their first and third base and shortstop positions last year when they needed a guy. I mean, they had that Almonte guy come up and just play fantastically.
They
should have
just called Greg Nettles. Just to see if they could assign him.
See if they could get something. All right. Let's go. Neil, we're going to sneak in a quick say what. We haven't had a say what. You know, it's not been like an every week thing, so we've got to get a quick one in. We only got like a couple minutes. We're going to let Tony D take over the mic for a minute.
Say what again? Say what again? I dare you. I double dare you, motherfucker.
I had to get rid of a big plate of sausage in front of Tony D before we get the mic over. What do you got, dude?
How about this? Your boy Silas Red. I guess I don't know if you saw this today. You know, his college career is over a little earlier than expected. I guess he got a knee injury. What do you think about his chances in the NFL?
I think he's going to have a tough time getting drafted. But I think that he'll get a bunch of invites to camps, which is probably almost better because to not get drafted and just have your choice. Because I think once he doesn't get drafted, I think he'll get a bunch of invites. And he'll kind of, him and his agent will get to pick and choose where they want to go to get a good fit.
Mm-hmm.
I think that this kid could stick. And I know he's had some injuries, you know, especially this season. I mean, if he would have been healthy this year, he would have been a mid-round draft pick for sure, I think. He's going to stick. I wouldn't be shocked if he might not stick on a roster this year. I wouldn't be shocked if he's one of those guys that bangs around in some practice rosters a la like Ryan Grant or Andre Brown or something like that.
Yep.
What do you think, Danny?
I think you got a shot that there's probably 20 running backs in college that are better than him.
Mm-hmm.
And of those guys, there's probably 15 that are draft eligible or will be in the draft. So I agree with you in the sense that the free agent route gives you the opportunity to pick the best situation for you rather than getting drafted by, say, the Vikings and you're just going to sit behind Peterson for however he decides to play. So, I mean, obviously it's terrible to have a knee injury, but I think it could work out for him in the end. Being able to pick with an agent, you know, good spot for him to go.
He seems like a really good kid. Yeah, we're going to get him on the show eventually. Norwalk kid. Seems like a good guy. Follow him on Twitter. Very religious guy.
God bless him.
He loves Christmas a lot more than you do. What else you got?
How about this? Wayne Gretzky, I'll turn us over to the hockey man over here. Wayne Gretzky says today that he thinks Alex Ovechkin can get 80 goals.
I wouldn't put it past him, to be honest with you. He is he's playing unbelievable right now. And I watched him last night against the Flyers. I watched him last night against the Flyers in Philly. They got their tails handed to him 5-2. He looks unbelievable. He looks a step faster than everyone. He looks like the Ovechkin of 3 years ago. So many people got on him last couple of years, and they finally brought it to light last night when the announcer said, you know, he's had a couple of 35-goal seasons. That's not good for him, but that's phenomenal.
Yeah.
Anybody out there, any fan of any hockey club, would take a 35-goal scorer in an instant. Even if
they're using that as a slight.
And people say, you know, all he does is shoot, all he does is this. You know, I've always liked him more than Crosby because of how tough he is. And this year, to see him playing as well he's on Backstrom's line. You know, Backstrom's a phenomenal player. And they got a lot of things going. And I don't know if he can get to 80, but I don't think there's any question he gets to 60-plus, 60, 65 goals. I don't think there's any question about that.
What's the record?
Gretzky had 92 in 83, I think. 83 or 84. 92 goals, 200 and some odd points. Decent. Decent player.
The guy can play. The guy can skate.
So how about this? Ray Allen. I forgot what day this is in the NBA. They're doing something where you can wear like alternate jerseys. He's gonna to the Celtics game.
Oh boy.
He's gonna wear a Jesus Shuttlesworth jersey.
Oh, this is Jesus that day when we talked about this. It was either in Say What or Do to You Serious, where you could put whatever you want on the back of your jersey.
January 21st, he's gonna wear it.
You're talking about doing a sequel to that movie.
Oh Lord.
You just hit him because he's a UConn guy. Whatever Ray Allen wants to do, God bless him, dude.
Yeah, good. That's good for him. Dumbest idea on earth.
Why does it matter to you?
So
dude?
Dumb.
I think it's silly that it matters to anybody what the hell somebody has on the back of their jersey.
Because it's so needless. Because it's just to sell more jerseys.
So what? Then they make some money.
It's stupid. Just put Allen on the back. He's one of the best off guards I've ever seen. I don't hate him because he's a UConn guy. I hate Jim Calhoun.
Neil, can we just agree that Ray Allen should wear a Jesus Shuttleworth jersey?
I need to see way more of this. It needs to be way more prevalent, not just in basketball, but across all sports. I mean,
Don't say it, Neil. It upset me.
The XFL started a great trend with Rod Smart's He Hate Me, and I'd like to see 5-head on the back of the number 18 for the Denver Broncos.
There you go. That league lasted.
Well, everybody remembers He Hate Me, though.
Good, though.
It's a one, saving grace.
So how about this? So you guys remember Florida Gulf Coast last year? Did you see this play the other day?
I did.
So a guy throws a full court alley-oop, one end to the other. Guy jumps, catches it, puts it in the basket. Clearly beats the time.
Got a tippet tone.
But I guess apparently, I don't know if this is true in the NBA and college, they say it's impossible to get a shot off with 0.3 tenths of a second on the clock.
How could it be impossible?
You have to tip it. That's the rule in college.
Catches the ball.
Yeah,
he's
clearly a bucket.
Watch. Full court pass. He clearly has the ball out of his hands before
it definitely gets out of his hands. That's garbage, dude.
It's a horrible rule.
Horrible.
That is just...
And you know what else they got to go back to? Remember Larry Bird when he used to shoot?
Enough of the 80s.
When he was inbounding? You could do it back then? And they got rid of that. That's the dumbest. That was the coolest
stuff.
It's like
defend him like Beckham when he'd make the corner kick.
Why would you get rid of that? You're talking
you just drop it.
You're talking about like putting stupid names on the back of uniforms. I'm talking about watching Larry Bird shoot balls from behind the back.
You want this guy just play a horse game.
It's great.
You're like that chicken nugget commercial. What else we got? We got maybe one left.
How about this 5'8 guy trying to post up this?
He's
7'6
from the Oregon Ducks, dude.
Ducks are legit, man.
Look at him. He's got position.
He's battling.
And real quick, the first ever man versus woman MMA fight in Brazil this Friday. What do you think about that?
Only take place in Brazil.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, look, Neil. Maybe I'll let you take this one. That's got bad news written all over. It could happen. Like in high school wrestling, that's one thing, but dude, the hot chick, Ronda Rousey, could beat me up. That's not going to beat another professional fighter up, right, Neil?
Well, the National Lacrosse League or something like that just allowed its first female player in. I'm telling you, man, the women are taking over, and I'm scared.
Yeah, they're not getting punched in the face, though.
They're not getting and just like reach, just like manly strength. Like,
yeah.
You know what
could
I'm
you
saying?
Watch that?
Yes.
You could?
Definitely couldn't watch it.
Oh, I would definitely tune into that.
Tony's all about it.
100%.
No way I could watch that. No way. I mean, I'm definitely rooting for the woman. I'll tell you that right now. I'm rooting for the woman, but I can't watch it. I can't watch this guy just pummeling some. Imagine, like, you know how MMA fights end. Imagine that. I can't watch
it. There's going to be no pummeling. You're going to hit her once. Yeah. And she's going to fit.
Well, we're off next week for Christmas. Probably going to be off for New Year's as well. We're going to be posting some videos throughout the next couple of weeks. With our thoughts on some upcoming bowl games and NFL games and whatnot. Maybe Neil's rants about the Giants, whatever we want to do. But thank you guys for listening. Thank you to Chris Herron and Bob Davis for joining us. Check us out, as always, tristatesportsguys.com, facebook.com/tristatesportsguys, or on Twitter @tristate_sports. Have a happy holiday, everybody. Tri-State Sports Guys.